Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, to another edition of Leave It in the Rings. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, and the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chen. I hope everybody's having a good week. It's been good weather here and there, but other than that, everything's going really good. We had a good week of fights, man, but we're talking about a stack fight week. We got a lot of fights to talk about, from Julio Cesar Chavez to Sergio Martinez to Canelo versus Lopez, and I'm being told right now by the dark cloud that he's running late. Give him 10 minutes. He'll be on live with us here on Leave It in the Ring. So, Fight Fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598. We got some pretty good scheduled guests to come on here on Leave It in the Ring. We're going to talk about the upcoming fights. We're going to break them down, and we're going to talk about this past weekend fight. Andre Ward, he did it again. Another shutout. I mean, you know, these guys know how to do it. They just know how to follow through with their game plan. They know exactly what they're looking for, how to take away somebody's best weapon and play it against them. Virgil Hill and Andre Ward. I mean, when's the last time we've seen a really good team like this? You know, even though, you know, I got to be honest with you, man, that I was saying even when the fight was announced, and, you know, there's a lot of folks out there that can attest to this, that I was one of the guys that would say that this was a bad matchup for Chad Dawson moving down. I mean, moving up, absolutely not. But moving down, yeah. This, you know, I said it over and over that weight is a big difference. You know, I know when somebody says, oh, you know, I've been at 168, I'm strong. That's what I campaign. I moved up to 175, I could still make 168. But when you add muscle, and then you try to un-add muscle, that takes a lot out of your body. I don't care what anybody says. That takes a lot out of your body, especially being an athlete. You know, when we had Chad Dawson and his head trainer, Iceman Scully, here with us on Leaving the Ring, you know, and I was one of my main concerns. I said, you know, what exactly are you doing to make sure you properly move down? And they said they were doing everything right. That first round, that first bell, you could see he was a bit slower. And then he gets caught. Let's just remember that. Then he gets dropped by Andre Ward. And this is Andre Ward. This is a guy that really, he's not really known to have explosive power. He's got speed. He's got ring intelligence. There's no feud with that. But power? I don't know about all that. So seeing a Chad Dawson who's been hit with, you know, by some of the best punchers in the world at 168 to 175, to see him get dropped at his 168 return to Andre Ward in the Oracle Arena in Oakland, California, which, gotta admit, it was a really good turnout. I was in Riverside with Josecito Lopez, who looked fantastic. And Henry Ramirez, who are now down in Las Vegas. But watching that telecast of Chad Dawson, I got to say it, man. You know, I'm not making excuses for the kid. Absolutely not. But you can't sit there and not say that dropping weight, going back to a division you haven't been at for quite some time, is not going to affect you. That's just, I don't buy it. Fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598. Let's chop it up here on Leaving the Ring. 3 hours of boxing talk. I'm your host, Dave Duenas. My co-host is running late, Mr. Gabriel Montoya. You know, we've been running around. We were in Riverside for quite some time. If you didn't get a chance to catch the Ustream, you can go back to Leaving the Ring Ustream and check it out. There's no sound on it because you have to go to the blog talk. But you can definitely see the interviews we're doing. We had Chris the Nightmare with us, who looked fantastic. Josecito Lopez looked ready to go. Henry Ramirez, very confident. I think we're going to have a good fight here. We're going to have a real fight here between these guys. I just hit my power button by accident. But let's patch in some fight fans really quick. We want to talk boxing here on Leaving the Ring. Let's patch in. Let's see. Let's get CT. What's up, brother? You want to talk about Martinez and Chavez and Ward and Dawson? What's on your mind, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring.
Hey, what's up, Dave? I'm very excited for this Chavez and Martinez fight. You know, it's been time. You know, they should have been fighting. And, you know, at first I was, you know, had mixed feelings about who would win. But now that I think more and more about it, I think, you know, Martinez is going to have some trouble early. And, you right. know, Chavez is pressuring his strength. And then later on in the fight, Martinez has a switch in a fight. You see it during the Macklin fight, even though they were dogging him out the whole fight during the telecast, he comes up with, you know, ways to just, these last few rounds in the fight, just his accuracy, his speed, and his power all just come into play. And he knows how to break people down late. And I can see him hurting Chavez so badly that Chavez Sr. gets fed up with the punishment and throws in the towel. I see it happening like that. But I look at it as being a...
That's a strong possibility. You know what? I wouldn't disagree with that. I mean, here's this father and son that still kiss each other on the lips. So, you know, there's some real true affections there.
Yeah. But I think, you know, he's never seen a fighter like Martinez. Martinez dealt with fighters who are very – when it comes to pressure that I've seen lately, I've seen nobody pressure people like Paul Williams with the volume, the number of punches that he throws. He just – even though Chavez is on a whole different level, he's way stronger than Williams, brings, you know, strength. And the thing with Margarito, I've seen when he fought Martinez, he brought volume to the, you know, the way Margarito throws punches from every angle. I don't see Chavez doing the same type of, abilities. But I think Chavez is definitely going to pressure Martinez. He's going to give him a good fight. But I think his stubbornness, you know, him coming squared up a lot and the punches that he's going to take is going to accumulate. And I think he's going to run into something he's not going to see late. Martinez is going to drop him and hurt him against the ropes and just Chavez Sr. throwing in the towel.
You know, the thing I like about this fight, and you were absolutely right, when this fight was talked about, when this fight was being mentioned by the hardcore fight fans, you know, because we were kind of fed up with them. We wanted to see Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. live up to the last name and get in there with a real fighter. 3 years ago, we would have said bloody murder. We would have been like, no way. This ain't, you know, this is a complete mismatch. I think we would have been throwing in the towel for the kid before the first bell rang. But this time around, man, this is a completely different fight. To me, Martinez does have the style. He does have the speed. He does carry the power. You know, I mean, like I said last week, and I said this a couple times, I said this on an interview one time, I said, name me a champion right now. Just name me one champion who carries the power, who doesn't fade out in the rounds, who carries the power all the way down to the 12th and final round. Those are the rounds that count the most, those championship rounds. Sergio Martinez is a true professional. Chavez is going to find that out, you know, on Saturday night. The thing, though, is that we got to look at some things that Chavez does do well. He does know how to close up that distance. He is a big kid, but he throws the right hand very well and educated. You know, he knows how to set it up. That's something for a southpaw like Sergio Martinez hasn't been able to correct. And my thought and my feelings is that he was letting Barker and other guys tag him with that right hand, tag him over and over and over. Does he let a light heavyweight, Chavez Jr., tag him over and over and over? Because we know that Chavez got a good chin, but we haven't seen whether it's not it's world class yet. Is it his dad's chin? Is it one of that resilience chin? We don't know that. And the same thing goes with Sergio Martinez. I did mention this a while back. I said the way to beat Martinez is pressure. That's the way he was broken down before. But being champion and being part of the pound-for-pound guys, his attitude has completely changed. This is a different Sergio Martinez, and this might be a slightly different Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. I don't know. It's going to be fun, man. Definitely it's going to be fun.
Yeah, I'm glad that you brought that up about Chavez. I agree with you. You know, when it comes to Chavez, he just happens to lure fighters into fighting his fight. He does it very well. I think he has that to his advantage. I think at times he's going to make Martinez fight his fight, and I think he's going to have his moments. But I just think the, you know, the way Martinez fights with his accuracy going down the stretch is going to get to Chavez. But I think it's going to be a very great fight. I'm looking forward to it. As you know, I am from Connecticut. So, I mean, I felt for Chad Dawson, but I just think that Andre Ward had too much for him. And, you know, whether it be at 168, who knows if it would have been the same way at 175. But, dealing with the style matchup, I just think Ward is a trouble for a lot of fighters. And I think to me, after the third round, when he caught Dawson, I don't know if it was the weight, but to me it looked like Chad's legs were gone. And, you know, like you were saying, Ward's not known for his power, but he just knew when to throw that left hook over Chad's right hand. And I think he knows that Chad is inverted southpaw, which he's naturally right-handed. But he took that jab away from Chad early and often, coming inside, roughing him up. Even outside, he was out-fighting Chad. So I just think, and Chad, with Chad saying in the fight after, he never fought a fighter with speed like Ward lately, I think that goes with Dawson being up at 175 too, you know what I mean? Not a lot of fighters up there that quick as Ward is. So, I mean, if they could have a rematch, maybe they would go to 175, but I don't think the outcome would be different. I think it would probably be a decision with Ward, but great performance by Ward. I think Dawson would do good going up to 175, which I think he naturally should go, but it was a masterful performance by Ward. I look forward to see who he fights next.
I do too. You know, I think you're absolutely right. A rematch called at 175 for what? Would there be a slight change? Absolutely, I think so. The change would be that, though, you wouldn't be stopped. I think it would go down to a decision. I think that Andre Ward is a problem child for anybody. He calls himself son of God. He should just call himself the problem child. You know, he gives everybody fits. He's a very educated, really smart guy in the ring. He does a lot of things that are subtle but old school. And, you know, the newbies of the sport, they don't like that. They don't like that old school, you know, grab an arm, tuck it in, and then use the free hand to try to land some punches. You know, there's some things in their footwork. You know, Ward brings footwork, and footwork does a whole lot of stuff. It makes guys confused. It makes them think they're a lot quicker than they are. It makes them think that they're turning them. They end up turning themselves. You know, they eliminate their short punches, their long punches, their jab, their straight right, their, you know, hooks. It eliminates a lot of stuff when you got good footwork, and Andre Ward has it all. You know, it's going to be really tough to pick against a guy at 168. If he decides to move at 175, I think we got some real challenges up there for Andre Ward. I'd like to see him decide, I've had enough here at 160, even though there's some good fights there, but I'd like to see him get challenged a bit more.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, anyways, brother, thank you very much for calling in, TT, brother. It's always fun and a pleasure.
Thanks a lot, Dave.
Fight fans, you want to call in, you absolutely can. Call in right now at the number. Let me look up the number because I always forget. You got so many numbers going on. 347-205-7598. Call in, man. Tell me who you guys think is going to win this weekend, Saturday. Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. versus Sergio Martinez, the king, the middleweight king, the guy that's really the undisputed, the Ring Magazine king. And Canelo Alvarez stepping up. Not stepping up. But in my opinion, he's fighting one of the toughest opponents in his resume. Not somebody that is in his weight class, but in terms of you look at fighters that at the conference have kind of got a little further that do have a real true chance of maybe upsetting him. I think Josecito Lopez might be that guy. You know, I know some people are going to disagree. They're already, you know, some people already put that that headstone right on the top of his head. So I don't know. I think the kid from Riverside is going to give him a good run around. I think he's going to make Canelo work, you know, just because the fact that Canelo likes to fight in spurts. He likes to take his time. He likes to admire his work. So it's going to be one of those nights, you know, that if Josecito Lopez wants to get this victory, he's going to have to fight all 3-minute rounds. He can't fight in spurts. He can't allow Canelo to rest and think and step back and look for openings. He can't do any of that. He's got to be on top of him. He's got to be that energizer bunny. You know, we're waiting for Gable Montoya, and our first guest should be calling in shortly at 515, 516. But let's patch in some more fight fans here on Leaving in the Ring. Let's get let's patch in Frank from Cali, who wants to talk all the big fights. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving in the Ring.
What's going on, boys?
What's going on, brother? How you doing, man?
Good. I'm living it up, having a great time out here in California. You guys ready for this weekend or what?
Absolutely ready, brother. You know, more than ready. You know what I mean? More than ready. I've been, you know what? It's been a while since we've had a really good fight weekend. So I'm all sold up. I already got like 24s in the garage stacked. Some kind of sauna in the refrigerator. Barbecue bags stacked up, ready to go. So I'm ready. How about yourself?
Man, I got about 12 pounds of carnitas waiting to hit the manteca. I got about 10 pounds of asada myself. We got some frijoles and some rice. We're ready to get it on over here as well. The thing is the tequila over here is probably not going to let anyone eat, or after they eat, they're going to throw it up all over my TV. And that's when the 30 special comes out. Just kidding. But, man, this fucking weekend is going to be awesome. I completely see Lopez outclassing Canelo, but Lopez has to go in there with the 38 that I was talking about, just to get the decision and hold the gun to each and every judges. We're going to see some shady shit this weekend for sure, from the weight scale to the fights. I mean, we're going to see some shady shit. That's all I got to say about that. As far as Dawson and Ward goes, I told Dawson 4 years ago he was made of nothing. He finally proved my point. He's a chump bastard. I don't give Ward any credit for beating this son of a bitch. Ward did what he had to do. I'll give him that. And Dawson can go to hell. I'll never pay for one of his fights, ever. And until Ward fights Kelly Pavlik, I won't give him any credit, because that's the real 160-pound kingpin. Kelly Pavlik will knock Ward out in less than 7 rounds. I have a show on Sunday. I want you guys to check it out. It's on Boxing Talk, just like you guys are. They're on Blog Talk. It's called the Frank and Bobby Show, man. It goes off 11 a.m. West Coast time, man. But Pavlik versus Ward, I'm calling it, telling it right now on everyone's show. Pavlik knocks him out in less than 4 rounds.
Well, there you go. Heard it from Frank, brother. All right, man. I'm going to tune in, brother. Thanks for calling in. Appreciate it.
Peace.
There you go. Fight fans, call in 347-215-7598. You know, Frank over there saying, you know, it's funny that he's not the only one that feels like that. A lot of people, you know, disappointed, upset with Dawson, but at the same time was calling him a long time ago, didn't think much of him, didn't think he had much talent, and here it is, you know. But there's going to be other folks there that are not going to fall in line with that. Lopez, you know what? I'm surprised Frank calling in saying that he could see Lopez outclassing him, outworking him. But he's got to, you know, he's not only fighting Canelo, the superstar from Mexico, the redheaded kid, but he's also fighting the judges, and I got to agree with them. There's going to be some shady stuff in Saturday events, but it wouldn't be boxing if there wasn't anything shady. You know what I'm saying? We had John Molina versus Tony DeMarco. How many of us really saw that happening? How many of us really thought that fight was going to end in one round? I couldn't believe it. I was stunned. I was surprised. You know, some folks thought it was premature. I thought it was a bit premature after watching it, you know, and the ref stopping it. You saw his eyes were clear, but his butt was against those ropes. Some of the rules are just not enforced by the refs. I think they kind of get overzealous. They jump in between the fighters a little bit too quick. He should have given him a chance to try to redeem himself, to see whether or not he was really hurt. Give him an 8 count. I think, you know, Molina deserved it. But then again, it's boxing. That's just the way it is. DeMarco did his job. I do believe that when he clipped him, I had a little bit of two things. He was off balance, but at the same time, being off balance, you know, I thought he was a bit hurt. He was kind of stunned. He was cold getting in there. And we saw the ending result for John Molina, John Molina Jr. Yeah, only thing that we could say is for him and Joe Goosens, go back to the drawing board. You know, figure out what happened, what went wrong. Molina could have took a knee down. He could have dropped down to a knee. He could have, you know, tried to clear his head. But
But, you know, at the heat of the moment, it's just going to be one of those things, you know. So, still waiting for my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, to call in here on Leaving the Ring. So, we could talk some boxing here. Let's see if I do got him with me. Let me find out right now. Hey, Gabriel, you there with me, brother?
I am here with you in spirit and in body. How you doing, man?
I'm doing fantastic, brother. How you doing?
I've braved the L.A. subways twice today. I'm good. I'm alive. Sorry about being late. It's just one of those things, you know, foreigners. Helping them out, trying to get them on the right subway, you know, old people and foreigners. I'm a friend to them all. And then I miss my train. So I'm here.
So I was talking about John Molina and DeMarco here. So
I was listening in.
Why don't you go ahead and throw in your thoughts and your takes about that fight?
I'm shocked. You know, I put in a feeler out to John to see if he wanted to come on. I haven't heard back from them. I imagine they're taking a little bit of a break. I think similar to Ward. You know, they all that build up, all that emotion. You kind of want some time to yourself, and then for it to go the way that it did. I mean, I don't know if John froze under the lights. If he got frozen by that long left by DeMarco, I think it stunned him. I don't think he was all that hurt. It wasn't like he was getting knocked around like a rag doll, or his head wasn't snapping back. He just wasn't responding, and that was kind of almost like an amateur stoppage in some sense. And that, you know, DeMarco just opened up. I didn't see a lot of clean shots. I imagine Jack Reese will be in Vegas this weekend. I can't wait to talk to him in person about it. But you know, they don't generally talk to the media on the record. But I'm curious to get his take. I just think they could have called a knockdown and let a fight that was highly anticipated play out a little bit longer. I think John had more in him than that, and he wasn't really given the chance to. He didn't give himself the chance to by taking a risk and throwing some shots. But, you know, I've never been in that moment, so it's hard for me to judge him. And I haven't talked to him, so I don't really know what happened. But I think it was a bit of inexperience. I think that's what happens when we talked about this. You fight those one or two rounders, three rounders. Those don't prepare you for world title stage, and you have a lack of fear because you've been through just about everything getting to this point. Guys just want to go from prospect to champion anymore without that real important long middle period. I think John, through different things, you know, being injured or the litigation and everything, did himself a disservice by keeping him out of the ring and not as sharp like attack like he should have been. You know, you look at, like I always said, Mike Alvarado and him are very similar guys. Former wrestlers came to the sport late. Alvarado has been very busy, even though he did take that jailbreak. He's been active. John hasn't, and I think that's hurt him.
I think so, too. You know, I wouldn't disagree with that. I think that the inexperience did kick in. I think that, like I said before, heat of the moment. Let's talk about that. Heat of the moment. You got a guy that's right on top of you, that wants to break you, wants to hurt you, and he's doing everything in his power to get you out of there. There could have been so many different scenarios. The ref could have, stepped in and given out an A count. The ref could have done this. The ref could have done that. You know, Molina could have, thought for himself and say, you know what, I need to, step aside here. I need to take a knee. I need to get these cobwebs out of my mind, clear it up a little bit. So many stuff. But until you're there, until you are in that position, until you know you have an understanding of what's going on in that ring, it's very hard to call it, you know. So I'd like to see if the kid get back into the ring. I hope it was not that damaging. But you know what, sometimes – taking a beating is a lot easier to recover from mentally than a short stoppage. You know, when you feel that you're ready and you think it's your time and you're ready to go, you worked your ass off to get in the ring, and all of a sudden it just like that, it's gone, it's over. That mentally sometimes is a hard way of recovering and getting yourself back into that same mind frame you once were.
Yeah, you know, the quick ones, I think what's going to be hard for John with this is getting over it that he knows he had more bullets left in his gun. He didn't even get to fire them. He landed one punch. He didn't get to do what it is that he came, you know, that he set out to do. I think that's going to haunt him for a very long time until he gets another shot and is able to get redemption. I mean, he's he's going to be stuck in that moment. I mean, haven't you had those moments where you just did something and it just went absolutely the wrong way, and you relive it and you relive it, and you're like, God, if I could just have that moment back, and nobody ever gets that moment back. You know, I find it interesting to jump to a fight in the future, and we'll get into it more. Is Sergio Martinez? You know, this is the second time he's fought in Vegas. The first time it was against Margarito as a young prospect, and he got sacrificed to a guy gigantic for the weight class at welterweight. Now he comes full circle to, you know, a much more experienced guy, a champion, multi-division champion, taking on Chavez Jr., a giant for his weight class, but at middleweight, and now he's at the end of his career as opposed to at the beginning. I find it to be a really fascinating parallel. You have to wonder if fate is so cruel that they'll have him lose as bookends, you know?
I agree. You know, we had CT that called in just a short bit ago, and we were talking about that. You know, to me, there's just, you know, the thing is that I think, if anything, the calm before the storm, and that's what we need to find out with Sergio Martinez. He's been a storm since the announcement of this fight, where the calm has been with the Chavez camp. The calm has been like, it's almost like the reverse of roles of who is really truly the undisputed middleweight champion of the world. You know, like the fact is, with Chavez watching him, and watching his the way he's been carrying himself, it's almost like he thinks he's been in mega big fights his whole life. Where Martinez, to me, is just a bit more excited, a bit more hyper. And I don't know, Gabriel. I don't like to see a guy go out of character, because we've seen this. You know, a prime example is when Tito Trinidad was walking in the fight, Winky Wright. He was dancing. He was, you know, moving. That was not something of norm. We don't see that. We didn't see that from Tito Trinidad, you know. And when I see somebody just leave their character of what they were before, it almost tells me that their mind frame is not there. It might be a little bit too much. Martinez, I know you want to hurt him, but I think that, to me, is play the calm role and do what you normally do, which is fight 12 rounds. Looking for a knockout, and we've seen this in history. When a guy looks for a knockout, guess what? He becomes a one-puncher per minute in the round, and he allows the other guy to do the work.
Yeah, that could be very dangerous. It's, you know, it's weird that the more I pay attention, the more I kind of look at this and go, you know, Martinez is kind of acting a little bit out of character here. Really talking about that knockout. He's going to punish him. It reminds me, it's funny that you mentioned Trinidad. I was thinking about it in the gym today. It reminds me of Tito Trinidad before that Winky Wright fight, where he was asking him, you know, are you sure you still want to go through the fight? You can back out anytime you want to. And you're thinking, like, Tito's never really talked like that. You know, he maybe had like one or two one-liners or whatever, you know, like the famous one with William Joppy, where he said, it was one thing to call out the devil, it's another thing to face him. But other than that, he's never really been like a shit talker. And then he had that hair, and I was like, oh, we're screwed. You know, Winky's going to get him. With this one, I mean, you know, granted, Sergio's got the same hair that he always has, but the attitude is a little funky. You know, it makes me wonder. You know, maybe he's even more, like guys are saying, he's at another level. You know, he's really super focused for this. He's going to knock the guy out, you know. We'll see. You know, such a hard fight to pick. I got to be honest.
I'm going to stick, you know, well, I'm not going to, everybody knows what my pick is going to be for this fight, but it's not one of those really solid, confident picks. You know, there are things in this fight that Chavez, to me, I do like. I think that he could take advantage. I think that he could really honestly outwork Martinez, pressure. And if he does have the chin of his father, Martinez is in for a long night. He carries his power for 12 rounds, Martinez. But that's at will. You know what I mean? There's a big difference. A guy throwing at will, meaning that he's timing it, he's looking for it, he's allowed to have some rest time. He's allowed to kind of do what he wants to do. He's allowed a bicycle in the ring, you know? If Chavez decides to say no, this is not going to be a jogathon. This is going to be a sprint. There can be a lot of a lot of change in this fight. You know, that means Ortiz might be trying to really do land those big shots that it can really take it out of him where he does get tired. He does end up, you know, spending a little bit more of that reserve gas, you know, in his tank. There's a lot of scenarios. This is a really good fight. I gotta admit to you, you know, even the Josecito Lopez and Canelo fight, it's really got me thinking this is going to be a great weekend of fights. We're going to have some really good fights here this Saturday. These main events are really, I think they're going to hold up to what we all are looking for and want.
You know, well, Junior's all, it's going to be interesting. I want to see what condition Junior comes in. It's really, they play such an amazing shell game with him. You have no idea who's training him. 124-7's got Alex Ariza, and there's a weird storyline of, you know, well, Freddie's not happy about it. And then they never really bring it up again. Second episode, you never see Alex Ariza. You barely see Freddie Roach, except for him to be going, where's my guy? You know, oh, I guess we're going home. And you kind of wonder if any of this is just subterfuge, you know. Is just, they always kind of create a storyline on there rather than cover the news. It's not a news show 24/7. Hmm. So I think that's important. You know, people in the gym even today, well, I saw on 24/7 that he's, you know, he's looking lazy and this and that. And I also, it was kind of interesting, I ran into Ellie Seck back in the gym. I was getting my last workout before Vegas in today, and he was trying to say that Pablo Sarmiento is to Gabby Sarmiento, the trainer that's not with Martinez right now, for mysterious reasons. He was detained, but no one will say why. He compared them to Pepper and Freddie Roach in terms of their levels of involvement and abilities, which I thought was absolutely ridiculous. You know, Pablo is a former champion. Pablo has been there. I know Ellie hasn't seen these fights, probably. I know he hangs around quite a bit with the camps, and, you know, he's a guy that gets in there. I'm not trashing him, but in terms of actual fight knowledge, I always kind of question him. He knows a lot of fight people. It's different than actual knowledge. And if you go back to like the first title fight that Martinez won in England against Richard Williams, guess who's in the corner? Pablo Sarmiento. It was like 25 fights ago. Pablo's been there the whole time. I don't think he's quite the game planner that Gabby is, but I think Martinez's intelligence and the fact that they keep in contact, as Martinez told me, with Gabby and discuss the fights and the planning and everything. He told us this on the radio, told me again in person. I think he's going to be in good hands. I think there's enough defensive holes to choose from with Chavez Jr. You know, the thing is, stay off the ropes. Don't let him tee off on you. Martinez doesn't do stupid things like that. If he doesn't sit there and try to be macho, I mean, he does get touched a lot. And the kid is definitely going to put hands on him. But I just like Martinez's angles, his ability to take a punch, his ability to come back, his ability to dig deep. His biggest danger is going to be that fifth, sixth round where he always takes a breather. He seems to get very winded in that period, and then he gets a second win and comes on down the stretch. If he doesn't get too tired, I mean, he's going to have a problem in that little stretch, because that's also where Chavez Jr. is strongest. He comes on in the middle of the fight and then kind of pours it on and comes downhill the back end. Will that second win be good enough to deal with that avalanche? A lot of great questions in this fight, man. I'm really excited by it. I cannot wait to get to Vegas. I'm so excited.
Oh, man, you know, I'll be home. It's going to be my little one's birthday on Saturday, so I'm going to be partying with my little one and watching the fights at home. So everybody over there in Las Vegas, have a great time. A lot of people hitting me up. Dave, are you going to be in Vegas? No, unfortunately, I'm not. I'm going to be hanging out with the little guy. We're going to be watching the fights together, and I'm going to be dressing up in medieval times here, Gable, you know, carrying a sword. We're going to have a sword fight here at the house with the other little 10-year-old kids.
You know what's weird is probably by then I'll probably be so drunk I'll be wearing a crown at some point. So it'll kind of keep that whole medieval thing going, you know? I'm really excited.
Oh, man. You know, and I'm going to miss all that. You're probably going to give your Braveheart speech there at the at the casino, and I'm going to miss all the fun, you know. 347-215-7598, call in, fight fans. Let's talk some boxing here. 3 hours of boxing talk on Leaving the Ring with your host, Dave Duenesson, your host, Gabriel Montoya, the Dark Cloud, and the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chan, the guy that makes everything run smoothly. Anyways, let's talk some fights here. Lucas Matisse's, man. What are your thoughts? What do you think? Where does it go from there now? Josie, we talked about it. We've almost, you know, you said you felt that he was being served up, and it looked like it was that case. You know, it was dinner was ready.
Oh, yeah. That was that little guy, Matisse, is an animal. I wouldn't want to fight him if I was looking around at the you know who we could deal with in the division. Somebody would, if somebody said, you know, Lucas Matisse, I'd be like, what? Lucas Matisse, I'm sorry, I can't hear you. You know, that guy is just, he's an animal, dude. I really love that right hand. I like that he's getting smarter every fight. You know, he's cutting off the ring well. And I kept saying that Ajozi's inactivity would be his undoing. And I really felt that he just wasn't quite all there. He wasn't quite as listless as Chad Dawson was, but...
He was celebrating before getting in that ring. You know what I mean? It was almost like they just overlooked what Lucas was bringing to the table. You know, it was almost like they didn't respect. They probably respected the power, not knowing how it felt, but they certainly didn't respect the skills that the kid was going to bring.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I think... Well, I mean, they had a lot of physical advantages in the fight. That's also the thing here, you know. And so I think looking at it, by all rights, I mean, they should have been a major problem. But, you know, Matisse, he's really learning how to be himself, how to get small, you know, move his head, get in close, and go for it, you know, and really like let loose with that right hand. And so I think it was just a question of one guy being sharp and kind of being on a roll lately, and another guy, even, you know, because I kind of consider Matisse to be an undefeated fighter. He's had a lot of close decisions go the other way, or key ones go the other way. And I think now he's really figured out what he needs to do, the kind of urgency he needs to fight with, and this kind of toughness. I need to get you out of here because I don't want to take any chances. I really enjoy the way he fights, and I find it exciting that we've got like Golovkin, we've got him. There's there's more punchers entering into the divisions, and that's always a good thing. You always want that one shark in the water that nobody really wants to deal with, but eventually they're going to have to. The winner of Soto Cross versus Maidana would be interesting, although, you know, it's higher than 140 fight. Tim Bradley would never want any part of him, and there's that Golden Boy feud. But you got Brandon Rios, Mike Alvarado. Ah, shit, that's another top-ranked card. Damn it, I need this cold war to end. There's too many good fights for Lucas Matisse. That is really upsetting. But, you know, the thing is...
It is, you know.
That's funny, a crown for the dark crowd. Yeah, I'm definitely going to be wearing it. I need to bring a crown of some kind or a cowboy hat. The Burger King. That's Paul Magno. That's a member of the Burger King Club, not me. I don't support fast food of any kind, except for Tommy Burger and In-N-Out Burger when I'm drunk. They don't have those in Vegas,
right,
I don't think.
Right. I think you were wearing your crown the last couple of days. I saw you on Twitter. You know, it's been a while since I've seen you have any beef, and you were.
You know,
you
I kind of avoided
being...
I think a true master knows which fights to take and which ones to go. Really? You know, I just, all that stuff, you know, I used to do the Twitter war thing. I just think I respect myself a little bit too much for that, especially, you know, it's the classic, you know, you get down in the mud with people, after a while you can't tell who's two insignificant fleas that work for the same site. Why even bother? That's how I look at it.
Absolutely, absolutely. He was back in the news and back in the mouths of fight fans after Saturday night, you know, with the fight with Antonio DeMarco and John Molina Jr., Adrian Broner's name being mentioned and dropped. Broner saying he'd like to have a peace between those two guys. What do you think, man? DeMarco gives him fits and problems, or is this another easy match for Broner?
That's a good question, you know. Like, I want to think that DeMarco is so class that we could get a classic on our hands. You know, he is a nice boxer puncher. He's a counter puncher. He can fight all kinds of ways. I really was upset because he looks so sharp. I mean, that long left hand that he landed on Molina, it was right on the button, right at the end of his power. It was everything that you would want in a left hand from the outside. Bro, he's quick. He can move well. he respects himself. And like DeMarco told us, right, it's going to take a guy that's better than Edwin Valero to beat me. You know, that's the bar. That's what would beat me one time. Everybody else, you know, fill out the application, line forms on the left. I want to see Broner in with somebody that's a physical challenge as well as a mental challenge. I don't know if they'll take it. They'll definitely take that before they'll take the Guerrero fight. But, you know, I find it funny. There was recently after that Guerrero interview, we did one on Max Boxing, and he was saying how nobody wanted to step up and fight him. I'm pretty sure that's not true. I think it was just that HBO didn't want to pay for the guys that he wanted to fight. It's a big difference. He's, I'm on the fence right now with Adrian Broner. You know, the act is cool, but it better come with some good fisticuffs.
I got to tell you, DeMarco to me, it's, you know, when we think about Broner, we think about flash, we think about speed, we think about stylistically, he gives a lot of people problems. The shoulder roll, he's very comfortable in there, really relaxed. He's precise. Counter punching is very hard to time and counter. He does a lot of things in there that anybody after the first, second round, they kind of just give up. But when he found like a Bonte de Leon, a Mexican guy that doesn't have tremendous speed, but he's got heavy hands. DeMarco has really heavy hands, but can box. Not the fastest guy in the world, but he's not the slowest either. I'm not sure either if the Broner camp and Broner himself or Haymans of the world would want to take on Antonio DeMarco. Here's a guy that can really possibly take years out of your career. I mean, let's think about Jose Luis Castillo against Floyd Mayweather. It didn't take years out of him, but what it did, it smartened him up a bit more and made him better. Would it do that? Would that same effect happen for Broner? I think it did when he fought Ponce de Leon. That's why I don't think the DeMarco fight would ever happen.
That's the thing. You know, I just have to – those guys want to be in a different league. It is kind of frustrating to me, you know, watching a Broner so talented, and everybody kind of tells me what a prodigy he is. And then the opposition kind of comes up. And Escobedo was supposed to be good. We saw what happened there. It's just, you know, we get a lot of people really excited to hear from our two guests, Virgil Hunter and Ice John Scully tonight. I think we're supposed to have a third trainer, but we're tracking him down. You never know with him. It is just, you know, it's just frustrating to me. It's hard for me to even speculate what's going to go on with him, because I think those guys are just going to do what they're going to do, and everybody else is going to be waiting around trying to fight him. I mean, it is that kind of thing where you maneuver yourself mentally and financially kind of into the driver's seat without actually beating anyone to get there. That's what's kind of frustrating to me about a Broner. Yes, he's a tremendous talent, but he's a talent that needs to be developed the right way. I don't want to watch these safe fights that totally favor him every time out and then kind of watch him smile and be arrogant and go, I'm the best there is. I want to see him challenged. I think it's about time. I really do.
I think so as well. I think it's a fight. I think he needs to step up. He needs to put up or shut up already. And but unfortunately, the way the world goes around for boxing, what we want and what we think is the right move to make is absolutely the wrong one when it comes to coming down to business. It's the wrong move to make. You know, why give fights to the fans they want to see when they'll still linger around and wait haggardly for the big fight, which probably will happen maybe 2-3 years from now, you know, when it really doesn't matter. You know, so it's just one of those things there. Fight fans, you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Call in, 347-215-7598. Or if you're catching the show late, some guys catch the show after we're off the air and they listen to us at work, riding home, riding to work or riding back home from work, you can email us here at leavingthering@gmail.com. Don't forget to tune in and listen to The Boxing Fix every Sunday night at 5 Pacific and at 8 Eastern, and then Noche de Boxeo on Monday nights, and those same time slots there as well. Gabriel, what's up, brother? Any news, anything juicy happening over there in the gyms in the L.A. scene?
You know, honestly, to me, it's been kind of a bit of a quiet week. I mean, for me anyways, I've been focused in on the fights this weekend and the stories that I'm working on. One that's kind of bypassed, everybody's talking about one son of a legend. There's another son of a legend fighting this weekend, John Jackson, the son of the great Julian Jackson. And so I got a story coming out about those guys. I'm not quite sure what John Jackson will become. You know, he's got a hell of a teacher in his dad, but his dad was also, you know, a special talent. He was the kind of guy that could just barely touch you and knock you the hell out. But I don't know if you've had a chance to see his son's fight. John Jackson, 13-0, 12 knockouts. He's a 154. And, you know, obviously that's kind of early on in his career. He'll be taking on Willie Nelson. I think this is actually kind of an underrated fight. You know, it's a middleweight fight for an NABF middleweight title. And Willie Nelson's a solid fighter, so, I mean, this is a losable fight. But I'm kind of excited by that. I was talking with Julian and talking about the nature of power and things like that, talking about his favorite knockouts. That's the article that's coming out tomorrow. I mean, the big news right now, you know, is everybody thinking that TMT Promotions is no more. You know, they got rid of Billy Dibb, gave him over to Mayweather Promotions, which I guess that was – I haven't heard that they've applied for a license, but – apparently they're going to, and you know, there's some sort of rift between 50 and, you know, for me, I'm not even that really, you know, it was exciting if 50 is going to be in the business, if he can get Pacquiao, which apparently now he's partnering up with him. That's the latest rumor. These things are all rumors. I kind of want to deal with what is actually real, what's actually going on, which is just like a horn of plenty of fights this weekend, really happening this month. Everything else to me is not that exciting.
I'm telling you, Justin Bieber is going to be become a promoter as well.
Wow, I'm really excited by that. Snooki, you know, yeah. I'm waiting for her next show. No, it's just, you know, the TMT thing. Let's have them do a show. It's like Kevin Ioli. You know, 50 Cent is now fourth most powerful guy in boxing on a list of 25, above Bob Arum. Everybody's just waiting for Bob Arum to die. It's like, I can't believe that actually happened. And then, you know, he's writing an article. Oh, my God, is he teaming up with Pacquiao? What's going on? Like, why don't we wait to find out? You know, why don't we let things play out just a little bit before we go all crazy? You know, we'll see what kind of show he can put on. Can he get a date? Will a network actually invest in him? You know, who's going to want to do business with him? I'm sure a lot of people, I'm not saying no one will. I'm saying, where's the deal? You know, they announced November 17th. Now they're not. You know, it wasn't their date. What the hell is going on? Let's actually see some action before we even start anointing people. That's, again, you know, I've kind of been, you know, with all the whole investigative thing that was going on, all the drug stories and all that, you know, and I've told you this privately, I've kind of gone back to swinging the original bat, which was I'm covering fighters, I'm trying to get inside their minds, figure out what they're going to do, figure out who's going to win the fight, and just keeping it real simple right now. You know, everything
Absolutely.
Else is... I also have the luxury of working with the best writer in the world, or reporter, Steve Kim. So, I'll let him break all the stories. Every once in a while, I get a little bit of a nut, like Greg Gabriel Campillo.
Sometimes it just makes life easier. You know what I mean?
It kind of does.
Sometimes it just makes just a bit easier. Hey, real quick before, this is aside from boxing here, I want to make a shout-out to all my brothers in the union, from pipe fitters, electricians, CMU guys, you name it. I had a brother that got hurt at the job site, truck fell on top of the kid, but he's okay. He's up and running. Didn't break any bones, which was a miracle. He was at the job site and he was changing a vehicle tire. He was changing out the tire and it buckled out from when he was under it and it fell on top of him. Another union brother lift up the truck. We call him the Hulk now. Lift up the truck and drag him out from underneath there. If there wasn't anybody out there with him, there was a strong possibility the kid would have died. So it's good to see Zach back out in the field, and he's only got some bumps and bruises. So shout out to my union brothers who, you know, I've said it, we see these guys a lot more than we see our families. We end up creating a bond. We do take care of each other. We watch out for each other. Fight fans, call in 347-205-7598. Make sure you have a nice cold one. We're talking boxing. 3 hours of boxing talk over here on Leaving the Ring with your host, Dave Duenas, and your host, Gabriel Montoya, the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chen. Let's patch in some fight fans really quick, Gabriel, before we start rolling in with some guests here on Leaving the Ring. Let's get let's get Salazar, who wants to talk Chavez versus Martinez. What's up, brother? You're on live right now and leaving the ring.
Wow, to be in the presence of David and to keep. Hi, guys. How are you guys?
Hey, what's up, man? Miguel Salazar, ladies and gentlemen.
Actually, Francisco.
Oh, is it Francisco Salazar? Why did I say Miguel? Oh, I'm thinking of the photographer. Jesus, God, you were definitely not him. How you doing, man? Are you going to be in Vegas?
I will be in Vegas. I am finishing the final touches on all the lesson plans for tomorrow because my students know that I will be in Vegas tomorrow. So I told them I love him a lot, but I can't miss Charles Martinez fight weekend. So
deal with the kids. I'm going to be in Vegas partying. I mean, seeing fights.
I can't wait to immerse myself in the fight weekend. Not just one fight weekend, but a huge fight weekend with two fight cards going on.
Who you got?
For Chavez Martinez, I'll be there covering the action for the local paper up here in Ventura County. I got Martinez. I'm not going to be surprised if there's a flash knockdown, but I talked to Sergio on Saturday, and I'd never seen him this motivated and this hungry and very, his attitude's very casual, but I just see this fire in him that he just really wants to make a statement, that he just wants to just make an example of Junior and just win very decisively and very impressively.
We were talking about that here, Francisco, about that, you know, and I was throwing out my bit of concern of seeing a fighter like him, Sergio Martinez, that's kind of out of character. You know, we don't really see him kind of be that aggressive. He's not that aggressive at times, you know. He's kind of more in the calm state. But this time around, it just kind of seems that this, you know, knowing that he wants this fight a whole lot, we've seen this happen before where a guy wants it so much that when it comes to fight night, they throw the game plan away and they decide to go to the strategy of just, I want to hurt you, so I'm going to throw one big punch at a time.
Yeah, that's also what I thought about. It's, you know, is he misinterpreting motivation / aggressiveness for bravado? And you would think that with so much on the line, he doesn't do that. But, even when he caught Paul Williams the second time, he had that little, that assertiveness, but not to where it's at for this fight, where he's just very bold. I don't know if it's overconfidence or whatnot, but he just feels very, very assertive. And he even said, like, I asked him about that in the 24/7. I said, you know, I've never even seen you say something like this. There's no other outcome. It's, you know, the outcome, only outcome is I'm going to win and I'm going to knock you out. And even he said, yeah, that's what I'm going to do. And I even asked him, well, do you have a prediction? You told me that you were going to knock out Paul Williams by the seventh round and in the second round. And, well, what's your prediction? He said, this fight will not go past the 11th round. So take it for what it's worth, but he's definitely going to want to make a statement on Saturday night.
Interesting.
Yeah, I've seen the same thing. I mean, I've been around him quite a bit, and he just seems so focused, so dialed in. But I wonder about that, you know, with him just saying, I'm going to knock him out. But he's a guy that believes like he says, it's either going to be, either I'm going to write it, either it's written or I'm going to write it. And I'm kind of wondering, you know, with this, I mean, is he a man of destiny? It is kind of one of those things. He's going up against a franchise and a future franchise at that, you know, a guy that if he wins this fight, it's going to be huge for Mexico. It's going to be a huge victory. And a career, you know, pay-per-view career is really launched to another stratosphere. Martinez is fighting so many things besides just Chavez Jr. It's crazy. It's going to be an interesting fight.
I didn't mean to interrupt you, Gabe, but yeah, that's what my mom even said. I went to visit my parents' house. My mom, she's been dialed in on boxing, even when she was a little girl, because my uncle, you know, rest in peace, he boxed a little bit in Mexico. And even my mom said, you know, it almost seems like Sergio you know, let's say he knocks him down. What would happen if that would happen? Chavez Sr. might get in the ring and lift up his son and say, no, it was a mistake. He just fell down. So I'm even thinking, like, you know, for even the casual fight fan or even the casual fan, they're all dialed in, and you know, it's almost like, if Chavez wins, it was impressive. But then, if Martinez wins, then it was beyond what the playing cards say with regards to what future fights are out there.
Yeah, it's going to be. You almost have to think, if he is still standing, Chavez Jr. at the end, there's no way Martinez wins. That's how I feel about it. You know, that's why it's crazy to me that he's the underdog, that the kid's the underdog. It'd be one of the last times he'll ever be an underdog. But I don't see, if you're a betting person, how you don't go to Vegas and lay some money on Chavez Jr. just based on everything that's surrounding the fight. You know, who he is, what it means to his future, what it means to the future of Top Rank. There's just, it doesn't seem, it's really hard to see a scenario where it goes to the cards and Martinez wins.
Right.
You know, like, even look at the Macklin fight. You could argue that Martinez is losing that fight, even just, like, forgetting the knockdown or whatever. But one of the guys being really aggressive, Martinez isn't throwing that many punches, but he's landing quality stuff. Now, put him in against an A-side with all the stuff I mentioned behind him, same kind of fighting style. He fights here and there, but it's not a consistent offense. It's just kind of flashy. Are they going to give him the benefit of the doubt, or are they going to give Chavez, who's trying to make the fight and probably throwing more punches? That's the big question.
You know, another thing, Gabe, I didn't mean to interrupt you guys, but another thing you might want to look at is just the judges. I mean, you have a guy like Chris Jonelu, who is from South Africa, and
right.
You know, Adelaide Bird, who's just, you know, do they favor the boxing? Do they favor effective punches? Do they favor effective ring generalship? And although I do agree with you, Gabe, that, you know, it's going to be almost, well, some, you know, somewhat hard for Sergio to win a decision, but at the same time, are you going to have judges that seem somewhat to the same Vegas judges that somewhat seem to favor the house fighters? Or with these judges that you have here, you know, that gives Sergio a little bit of a shot as well.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. That's a good point. Well, I'm going to be there. What time are you getting in?
Wife and sister-in-law and I, we're leaving the home at around 5:36, so we're probably going to enter the Vegas outskirts like around 10, 11 o'clock. So I'll be there in the mid-morning time.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll be getting in late. Yeah, well, I'll catch up with you when I get out there. Hopefully we're sitting next to each other. It's very few people on press row that I – actually, nobody else. I really enjoy sitting next to you. We crack each other up. So,
it's much appreciated, Kate.
Hey, my
you're
pleasure.
Good writer, and I always enjoy the camaraderie and all the accolades. You too, David, all the accolades and all the praise that you give me. It's humbling, and it's I really appreciate all the things that you say about me. Really do.
Cool, man. Even stuff you haven't heard yet, but
yeah.
But hey, man, I'll catch up with you in Vegas, and
be safe.
And we'll talk some mess, and well, I won't mention that other thing, but. Yeah, we'll see. I'll see you at ringside, man. Thank you for calling in. We should have you call in. You're working for Boxing Scene now. You're not with that other venue we won't discuss, right? You're at a new venue.
I'm with BoxingScene.com, and I write a weekly column for the Ventura County Star up here in Oxnard, Camarillo, who's not training here in Oxnard. So BoxingScene.com and the Ventura County Star.
Sweet. Well, there you have it.
There you go. All right.
It's your friend. Let's go Salazar. I will see you ringside, my friend.
Sounds good. Look forward to seeing you, Gabe. And you take care, David. I'll talk to you soon.
You too, brother. Thank you. Thanks for calling in.
All right. Bye-bye.
Fight fans, you want to call in? You absolutely can. 347-215-7598 here on Leaving the Ring. 3 hours of boxes talk with your host, Dave Duenas, and my co-host, Gable Montoya. I always like talking to Francisco, man. He's a really good guy.
He cracks me up. He's a delightful guy. He's really humble. He's not like some writers. It's like you meet him and they've got kind of an ego about who they are. And
right.
Francisco
Carlos the same way. You
Ricardo, too, who's out of, you know, who has the gym from Extreme Boxing, really nice, very humble person. Good guy all the way around, man. Those guys are really, really, really good people. Accepted us pretty quick and you know, thank them for actually, you know, that following us, what we do in the sport of boxing. So it was really fun, you know.
Yeah, he's just a good guy, you know, and I just appreciate people that work really hard at what they do and don't really, you know, you never really see him get into the politics. I mean, I get in arguments with people and this and that, but Francisco's a guy that just kind of stays on the sunny side of the street. He's opinionated and does a really good job, but he doesn't get all crazy, you know, which I appreciate. Let me be crazy.
Life of Gabriel.
Virgil Hunter. I know. Yeah, I have problems. Let me text Mr. Hunter and see about calling him in. Do you have his number in front of you? Or I've got it.
No, I don't. I don't have it in front of me.
Tablet. Your phone's still dead. Or your.
I'm using my tablet. My phone. Yeah, I have to buy me a new tower for the computer. I haven't had time. My schedule's been out of whack. You know how things have been over here for me. But I'll get back. I'll get back in the mode. I haven't even been able to upload my website. You know, the website that everybody you know, runs to after the show and checks out our articles that we write up for. So kind of dropped the ball on that for a minute, man. But we'll get back on the
What the hell, Dave? You're fired. That's pretty much
it. I know.
Well, give me 1 second, and I will try to figure out how to do it on this infernal Skype. You can call people in on yours, right?
No, I can't call anybody on my tablet.
I'm going to kill.
Remember? Remember? You know.
So it's just me. Right. So I got to call them in myself, is what you're saying.
You're the man. You're the man with the plan with a microphone in your hand, Mr. Gable Montoya.
I'm going to get Mr. David Chen. I don't like dialing in. This Skype thing is got me completely confused. I feel like it makes me feel like I'm 60 when I'm not even that old. But this damn technology.
You know, I can. Call me 347-215-7598. Let's talk some boxing here. 3 hours of boxing talk. Get a nice cold one. Let's sit down, man. We got a lot of fights here to break down. We have some scenarios that we need to break down for Josecito Lopez versus Saul Canelo Alvarez. And then on that same day, on pay-per-view, Sergio Martinez and Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. Who are you repping? Who are you going for? And what's your call? Is it going to be knockouts on both cards or decisions? Hey, man, let's find out. I'm interested in hearing other fight fans around the world of what they think is going to happen Saturday night. We know we think what's going to happen, but it's always fun to hear somebody else's take and what they see. You know, that's the fun part of talking about boxing here on Leaving the Ring. Gabe was trying to get a hold of Virgil Hunter, the head trainer, one of the masterminds behind Andre Ward, who was successful this past Saturday at the Oracle Arena in Oakland, California, against Andre Ward. So as soon as we get him on, we're going to have a chance to chop it up, and then maybe he can dissect these upcoming fights this Saturday. It's always fun. We've done this plenty of times when we get trainers on here on Leaving the Ring, and they break down the fight. They tell us what they think is going to – what they think, what they foresee, what's going to happen when the fight – that first bell rings in the fight. So – I can't wait. Virgil's always been one of my favorite to break down fights, man. It's one of the guys, just a ball of boxing knowledge, and real fun to talk to.
Yeah, if only I can get him on the show. I gave the number to David Chen. I don't know if he's listening, and I'm hoping that he's calling him in.
Oh, he is.
He is. Good. All right.
Cool. All right, well, let's see what happens here.
I find it much easier to let other people do that, the call-in. Even though, I ill-timed my workout. I'm a little still kind of coming around. I just came straight out of the gym, ran home, and here I am. There's a lot of fights here to look at. I mean, we got fights tonight. Jesse Vargas, takes on Aaron Martinez. Luis Cruz is in action, although looking at this schedule, I don't think this is the right fight.
Aaron Martinez is with the trainer of with Paro, right? He's with Paro.
I believe so.
The Aaron Martinez we've been thinking about, who's a very decorated amateur fighter. Yeah,
he's
a really
good
fighter.
Carlos Burgos. No, that's actually somebody else. I'm all over the map. David, how are we looking on that, Mr. Hunter? Is he answering?
If we got some time, we can patch in another fight fan here on Leaving Arena.
Yeah, why don't we do that?
Okay, let's get, let me see. Let me go down the roll over here. He's been on hold for the longest. Okay, let's see. Let's get Abbas, I believe that's your name. We want to talk Amir Khan here on Leaving the Ring. What's up, brother? You're live.
Yeah, what's up, man? How are you?
I'm doing good, man. How you doing?
I'm good. Everything's great.
What'd you want to talk about?
Oh, I was wondering about if Roger Hunter is actually supposed to be working with Amir Khan or not. I think it would be actually a pretty good idea if they turn Amir Khan into an all-around boxer. He could be pretty good then.
Well, I mean, I think with Khan, though, with that chin, I mean, you're going to have to hide a lot of things. And his tendency to want to engage and then stay there, you're going to have to take that away. I think he's got all the tools to be a very good boxer, but he's not content to just be that. Somewhere along the line, somebody convinced him he's a power puncher, and he's not.
I
think that's his problem, is that he doesn't – and he fights at such a high
speed. I just think that you're not going to be able to calm down Amir Khan. I think that – that sense of just being able to kind of control your emotions, it takes, for some guys, it just takes time and age. You know, there's just some kids that have an old soul, so they can really kind of contain their emotions in the ring. Amir Khan is more of a guy that wears his emotions at the edge of his gloves, and it's going to be hard to change who he is once he gets those gloves on and once he gets in the ring. It'd be interesting what Virgil Hunter can do with him, but, you know, even Virgil has said it, you know, it's not – I could teach him – I could teach anybody anything they desire, but it's up to the fighter of using it when it counts.
Right, you're right. If he throws a lot of punches and he doesn't know why he's throwing them, it seems like.
Right.
You know? That's what he does a lot, and he gets caught up in long exchanges. If he just fights on the outside, I think it'd be a little better.
Yeah, it'd be a problem. I mean, the problem is, though, is that at some point you got to fight on the inside. Sometimes you are going to have to fight. It's just a matter of making sure that you do those things when you want to, not when the other guy dictates. Or I think he kind of fights on instinct and emotion sometimes rather than sticking to the game plan. And that's a problem. You know, he ends up, like you said, so you're kind of sticking around for the receipt, you know? There's a long series of punches and then waits, and bang, he gets caught. I think he should have, you know, the guy, particularly like Garcia, he's young, he's strong, he believes in his punch. Khan needed to gore the bull, you know? He needed to stab him with spears, hit him with swords, wear his ass down, make him bleed, and then try to go for the kill. But Khan tried to stay there, and I'm the bigger guy, I'm the taller guy, I have the better technique, I'm going to knock this guy out. It was just a stupid plan that somebody should have stopped him from ever thinking about.
Yeah, he gets too confident, it seems like, when he gets in the ring. He was probably thinking that he could easily walk through Garcia, because the first two rounds he was jabbing him pretty good.
Right.
Yeah, he was. You know, it's just, I think, a matter of, like I said, a slower game plan. Even Freddie kind of alluded to that. It's like he's just a little too aggressive, you know?
Right.
And I think that's going to be his undoing, you know? He's going to need, and it's kind of, what's sad is it's going to be our undoing, because he's going to slow things down, and he's not going to be very exciting to watch, you know? But, and that's kind of the one saving grace with him, is that you don't really ever see Amir Khan fights that are boring. He likes to go for it, you know?
Yeah.
Say what you want about his British accent or him calling people out, or he's kind of like Broner. He kind of has positioned himself as the star, the man to beat, even though he really isn't at 140.
The only difference between him and Broner, though, he takes on some real fights. You know, he's willing to mix it up. He's willing to challenge himself. You know, and no matter what, I have a lot of respect for Amir Khan for what he tries to accomplish.
Right. Oh, yeah. He has a lot of hurt, but do you think he could bounce back or no?
I think so. He's done it before.
I think so.
Yeah, he was thinking he wants to move up to 147. I don't know if that's a good idea right now, actually, for him.
I think he's got a lot of things to sort out. Like I was kind of saying earlier in the show, you know, people take one little thing, you know, I'm going to go to 147, or I'm going to do this, I'm going to get a new trainer, and everybody kind of updates this 24-hour, every 2 seconds, we need an update news cycle that we've got. I mean, I think that what you're seeing is a guy that's got cameras in front of him, he's just saying things. You know, I think until he really settles down and gets a coach, really settles down and figures out and accepts why he lost, he's not going to move forward at all. And really all these things are just kind of speculation until he does that.
Yeah, you're right. Are you guys supposed to get him on the show again anytime soon?
Amir Khan? Right now I believe he's overseas. I'd like to get him back on. They're kind of – we'll see. We'll see how it goes. Right now I'm kind of focusing on getting Virgil Hunter on our show because we're about 10 minutes past and we're supposed to have him. But, yeah, hopefully we will. I like having Amir on, and he's always very candid with us. So hopefully when he's back in, maybe he is in the States. I'm not quite sure where he is. I haven't checked in on him for a while. I like to give these guys a little bit of time after a major loss like that. I'm going to stick a microphone back in their mouth and go, tell me about it, you know.
Right. All right, brother. So, thanks for calling in. We'll put you back on hold.
All right.
Bye, Brad. You want to call in 347-215-7598. You certainly can. Let's talk some boxing here on Leaving the Ring with your host Dave Duenas and Gable Montoya. Man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chen. We're still waiting on Virgil Hunter. Hopefully we can get him on really soon so we can talk boxing with him. I got to tell you, I'm still a little bit stunned. I'm a little bit stunned with the Andre Ward thing. I was picking him to win, but I wasn't picking him to win in that type of fashion. Again, he surprises me. He just gets better and better, you know. He just comes up with a game plan, and he does his thing.
Yeah. What's going on with Virgil Hunter? Are we calling him? I'm trying to I can't get a hold of David Chen here, so I'm kind of flying blind. I'm trusting you guys to... David, are you there?
Mr. Dave Chen?
Well, in any case, hang on, Dave. I'll be right back. I got to mute myself.
Go right ahead. I was actually texting a publicist really quick. Tell him that we're on live right now because I was being asked a question here on Leaving in the Ring. Fight fans, call in 347-215-7598. Again, 347-215-7598. Let's talk some boxing. 3 hours of boxing talk. We've got a lot of fights here to talk about. Talk about this past weekend fights, you know. And Gabe over here texting me at the same time. distracting me here on Leaving the Ring. I got to go back with this Canelo fight, man. I got to break this down. Canelo here, Josecito Lopez, going out there this Saturday, and if you didn't tune in on our Saturday live broadcast on Ustream and on Block Talk, you missed what I was talking about. I always said that a guy that moves up in weight, naturally their body gets bigger. You know, they end up kind of getting a much bulkier on top, but their legs stay at the division they were campaigning in. So with Josecito Lopez being at 140, fighting at 140, and decided to jump up to 154 when being called on by Canelo to fight him, believing that his legs were going to be skinny and he was just going to have a bigger upper body. It wasn't that case. It seems like he filled everything up correctly. He did the right things to move up in weight. His legs were thick. They looked like 154-pound legs, and his body just measured out equally with his legs. So overall, he looked in great, great condition. I think we have Gabriel Montoya back with us. You there, brother?
I'm just trying to bring in Mr. Virgil Hunter. Here we
Hello.
Go. There you go. Hey, Mr. Hunter, how are you? It's Gabriel Montoya.
Hey, Gabe. How are you?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Doing great.
Well, I'm here with my co-host, David Duenas. You've been on the show many times. First off, let's just congratulate you. What a masterful performance that was. An absolute undressing.
Masterpiece.
Tell us, I mean, can you, I know before fights you can't tell us what the game plan was. Can you tell us a little bit of what you guys were thinking heading into the fight?
Well, you know, we tried to break it down to the simple factors that would make a big difference in the fight, and made a determination about Chaz's rhythm. A lot is said about his hand speed, but his rhythm is what we concentrated on, and positioning ourselves to negate and keep his rhythm off balance, which we felt would affect everything in his arsenal. And we were able to do that.
When you look at him, you know, we talked earlier today, and you break both eyes down, strengths, weaknesses, and everything. It's hard to find Andre's weakness, for one. With Chad, I mean, was there anything to you that was glaring? I mean, I know that left hook. I talked to one of the guys you guys worked with, Ronald Mixon, and we were talking over and over after the fight about that left hook. Was that something, I mean, that was just a wide opening that you saw that Andre knew, if I get in this certain position, this is exactly the weapon that I need to use?
That's correct. The left hook was the major player in the fight. I felt that he was open for it, and, you know, we just had to make a determination in what area to put the opening punch, the punch that was opening him up for it, which would be the right hand to the chest, to open him up, to make him bend a certain way and open himself up for the hook. So we were able to do that.
You know, looking at the fight, everything I've always said, from the moment a fight's announced, the fight kind of begins, really even when it begins negotiating. For you guys, and I'm just taking the devil's advocate, the critical side, do you feel any of the criticism? People are saying, well, he didn't go up to 175. It was a 168 fight, and Chad looked drained by the weight. How do you guys respond to that? And really, in a almost an art of war sense, I think you guys won the battle on every single level. Is that how you guys approach it?
Well, you have to approach it that way. I mean, it's going to be criticism regardless. If he went up to 175, it was going to be criticism. It's just the nature of the game. Right now, he seems to be a fighter that's open to criticism. And, you know, it just comes along with the territory. Chad Dawson called us out. And called us out with conditions that he came up with himself. He didn't call us out and suggested 175 or any other way. He called us out, and all he did was validate what he had been saying for the last year, that he had planned to go to 168. He'd been saying that long before he ever fought us. So he came to 168. I think what people need to understand is there's no picnic for us to make 168. So it's not like we eat steak dinners every day and eating breakfast, lunch, and dinner before the weigh-in. We have to sacrifice and pay a price also to make 168. So in that itself, there lied no advantage. He made the weight, and it's obvious that he didn't have a problem making the weight because he was 10 pounds heavier than us the next night. So you have to look at it. I think people should look at the end result of it. You know, you can take Oscar versus Manny. He only put on 5 or 6 pounds. That's a weight-drain fighter. When he can only put on 4 or 5 pounds the next night, that fighter is weight-drained, okay? He put on 20 pounds. That doesn't look like a weight-drained fighter to me. They had a plan, and as far as the weight and everything was concerned, what they had been speaking, they said we were going to be the bigger, stronger fighter, and they fulfilled that. So people are going to say what they want to say. They're going to stay stuck on what they want to stay stuck on. It just comes with the territory.
Virgil, I've always said, you know, that by far one of the smartest guys in boxing, you know. I mean, you always amaze me when I sit down and I speak to you. I always enjoy talking to you. I always walk away feeling like I learned just that much more. You know, when this fight was announced and you guys stuck to your guns and saying we'll stay at 168, you obviously know because you're a trainer that when you get a fighter, you do all the right things. You take them down. You pull blood. You try to find out if there's anything wrong in their system. How could you help them? How could you get them back on a diet that's going to work for them? When I hear, and you've obviously, when they accepted 168, is that something that you would have advised any of your fighters to ever do, which is leave a weight division, campaign for a certain amount of time, and then go, yeah, let's go back down and face one of the best fighters in the world in their territory?
Would I do that?
Yeah, would you do that?
You're asking me, Dave?
Yes, sir.
I don't think so. I think once you move on, I think you should move on. The reason to move on is because there's an issue with that weight, and you feel that that's no longer feasible, healthy, or it's an issue there, or it's just time to move up. I don't think under any circumstances that I would be going back down. But again, I mean, they're different people. You know, Chad has the type of frame that he doesn't put on much weight in between fights. He has a different metabolism. He has a different build. That elongated bill where he doesn't carry mass. And from what I understand, he walks around in 180. So, I mean, that's pretty logical for him to want to make 68 when you have people walking around 30 pounds heavier than their fighting weight and they continuously make the weights. So, I mean, I don't think it was a stupid decision on their part. I think he campaigned in light heavyweight division at the time because it was, you know, the appropriate time for him to campaign there. But, again, if you listen to Chad over the years, he never ruled out coming back to 68. Never ruled it out. Long before we fought.
Absolutely.
Very true. Yes, he's always talked about that, yeah, that I could return. Let's get into the fight a little bit. You've always said this, but you said this in the past. If you watch fighters with Andre to the fifth round, usually around the fifth round, they capitulate. It seems sooner in this fight. Once the knockdown happened, that was it. It seemed like Dre was in control, and Chad not only didn't have any more answers, but he seemed to stop looking for answers. Did you get that sense too, that he kind of was like, all right, I'm going to go the distance and survive this thing, rather than actively look for ways to hit Andre?
Well, yes. I mean, it happens in every fight. We get into a third round and you can actually see, and I'm used to seeing it now, so I can pick up on it quite easily. You can see them make up their mind that they're not going to push the issue because pushing the issue is what got them in the predicament in the first place. So, you know, when you have a kid striking you like that and striking you cleanly and everything that you're trying, he has a counter for it. It's very discouraging.
Mm-hmm.
And he made a decision to, he was always looking for that big punch, that lucky punch, so to speak. He was always looking for that. But around the fifth round, I think he made up his mind that he couldn't match him in speed and he couldn't match him in physical strength. And I think that's what really began to work on Chad's head, that Andre was stronger than him. That did something to him.
Yeah, I think that was one of the things I was think about with Andre. People think of clinches, two guys hugging each other, stop hugging or they're resting. But you guys are old school, and there are ways, I was kind of watching the way Andre holds when he gets in tight, not only does he get safe, but he takes a physical toll on people, the way he kind of grabs your arm, either the left or the right, kind of shifts his weight. He makes you pay for every little thing. And I think it's always very telling, his first clinch with somebody, who's going to be the stronger guy, and particularly in this fight. And I just, right off the bat, was like, you know what, Dre just seems like the stronger guy. To me, Dawson, and I'm certainly no expert, he looked a little sapped by the weight. I think he made the weight fine and blew back up, but I don't know if – I think it's a terrible idea to drop down and wait 6 years after the last time you've been there. Oscar proved – history just shows it, like you said. Once you move on, just move on. Your body just – especially with a lean body like that, he was sacrificing muscle. He wasn't sacrificing fat, you know. It's not like Chavez Jr. But going forward, what do you think – are the options? Where do you go from here? Or do you kind of just let the landscape play out a little bit longer?
Well, personally, I think that Andre waits a couple of fights that I would say that every champion at some point gets in his ring. And I think that he should be acknowledged and compensated and allowed to fight a couple of fights that on of course in preparation we wouldn't look at it that way, but on paper that would be less of competition. I mean, if you're going to televise a fight with a guy coming up in two weight classes tomorrow, if you're going to televise a fight with a guy who hasn't even beaten the top five contender yet, then are you saying that a guy who's wiped out a whole division of champions and then just beat the top guy in the next division up, he can't have a fight or two of lesser magnitude, I don't want to say competition, that would be the wrong word, but, you know,
a showcase, a little bit.
Considered. Of course.
Well, let's just call it what it is, Virgil. All these other guys get to do it.
That's where I'm coming from.
Yeah.
I mean,
there's always that balance. You know, you guys are on the business end, and you're the performer. You train the performer who's going to take physical damage, puts himself in harm's way. My job is to kind of balance between the consumer and the sport, and also to be fair to you guys. But we were talking about it earlier, Dave, you know, how Adrian Broner keeps talking about how great he is and everybody's trying to get him in Floyd's spot. I'm thinking, you and Floyd, like, what have you done? You know, you got a title on a questionable decision and then didn't make weight and lost it on the scale. I mean, to me, looking at a guy like Andre, you're right, he should be celebrated a little bit. And he's also building a draw up there. I mean, I think, you know, you guys are still kind of finding that promotion, but I mean, Oakland, I heard, was a very good environment. There's a lot of people there. I think it's good for the sport. Get a couple of those showcase fights, be electrifying, perfect the art of finishing people, and then let's get to another name. Does that pretty much sum up where
you know,
think you guys are at?
That's how I look at it. Whether or not that materializes or not is another issue. That's how I look at it.
Sure.
Whether somebody...
What happened? I think we lost Gabriel Montoya somehow. He'll be calling in. I'm speaking. The reason I'm being quiet, I haven't asked any questions of Virgil Hunter. It's been a little crazy here, but hold on. I'm speaking to. A publicist who's going to be bringing on a guest that we didn't have scheduled, and we're trying to sort everything out. So as soon as Gabriel Montoya gets back on and we can get Virgil on, I think we have a few more questions, we can definitely get on the next guest in between before we get on John the Iceman Scully. So, Fight Fans, you want to call in 347-215-98, you absolutely can here on Leave the Ring with your host, David Duenas, and my co-host Gabriel Montoya, and the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chen. Again, we apologize. The call was dropped. Gable fell off. I don't know what happened. So he is trying to get back on right now here on Leaving the Ring. And at the same time, I'm trying to work, trying to get in our next guest. Oh, excuse me, the next guest here on Leaving the Ring so we can chop it up boxing. And then we have John the Iceman Scully, who's the head trainer for Chad Dawson. He's going to give us his side of the story, what he thought, what happened. And then we'll go from there. I got some questions for John. Let me find out what's going on here. No, he's asking if I got cut up. No, you did. Anyways, fight fans, well, we're waiting for Gable to get back on the line here on Leaving the Ring. Again, I apologize. I think he thinks he's still on when he's not. So call back in here, Gable, so we can get Virgil Hunter back on the line. Anyways, fight fans, you want to talk some boxing, David Chen, can you please check the board? We've got some calls here on hold. Absolutely, probably, you know, having some fight fans that want to call in and talk about, give their take about Martinez and Chavez, or their take about Andre Ward versus Dawson, or probably even talk about, you know, what their thoughts with Virgil Hunter saying here on our interview on Leaving the Ring, or Josecito Lopez and Saul Canelo Alvarez. So please check it out, see who we got on there on Leaving the Ring. Mr. Gabriel Montoya, what's up, brother? Where you at? Call in. And I'm going to go back, man. I'm going to talk a little bit about Canelo and Lopez. Just talking about, you know. He's asking me how. I don't know. Call back in. Anyways, I was saying we were back out over there, you know. I haven't made my definite pick. I still think that this is going to be a real fight. I think there's, you know, there's guaranteed explosion. Anytime Osito steps in the ring, there's, you know, he gives a good fight. He gives it his full effort. You know, there's no question about his heart. This guy gets in there and he dukes it out. He fights to, you know, he's a warrior. That's the only way I could sum it up. This kid's a warrior, and he's definitely training and trying to get himself prepared to make a run for his money. I have no clue why he has not called back in. He's texting me. Gable, you need to call back in. I don't know, brother. Got to call back in here on Leaving the Ring. Anyways, fight fans, why don't you call in right now, and let's talk boxing here on Leaving the Ring. Going back again, like I said, you know, the kid is all heart, is all warrior. He's going to have to be in a pace that it's just going to be from the start. You know, I'm not sure if the smartest thing is to go after Canelo Alvarez from the beginning. Just go at him. I don't know if that's the thing you want to do. He did that with Victor Ortiz, and Henry Ramirez did say that the reason why they did do that is that they wanted to see if they could adjust to the speed. They really wanted to test themselves and see if they could take a 147-pound puncher. Do you want to do the same thing? Now, is Saul Canelo Alvarez the fastest guy? No, he's not. You know, he's got modern speed. He's a guy that he puts combinations. He works from downstairs to upstairs. So he's a fairly good technician. But do you really want to find out if you could take a 154-pound puncher who's not going to come in at 154 at the time? He's going to walk in that ring probably about 160. He's going to be a middleweight stepping in, you know. I'm not sure what Cito's going to step in. I think he's going to be breaking 154. He might not even come in at a full-fledged 154. He may come in maybe 2-3 pounds under, you know. So he's definitely going to be the smaller man stepping in the ring against Saul Canelo Alvarez. So this is an interesting fight. We got to see the game plan. My game plan, if I had him on my corner, you know, would be you want to work outside. You want to make the guy that fights in spurts fight a little bit more. He's going to have to chase you down. Make him impatient. Make sure that he's impatient. Make sure that he decides to lead in the death so you can counterpunch. And then when you hit those mid-rounds, when you get in those mid-rounds and you made him work a little extra with those legs, with those really thick soccer legs he has, then you turn it up. We've seen Canelo tire out. We've seen him try to pace himself on certain spots. You know, when he fought Sugar Shane Mosley, you know, he was going 12 rounds, and he was dishing it out. He was landing a lot of shots. He was trying to take the old man out of the ring. But when we saw him work, we saw a change of pace. We saw the guy breathing hard. We saw him slow down a little, even a bit more. You know, this is a guy that likes to paint a really good Picasso. So you got to make him paint a little faster where he's not outlining, you know, where he's just being frantic and he's throwing anything up on the canvas. And that's when you go for the kill. When you see him starting to tire out, slow down. And when you see a guy slow down, they start becoming slow thinkers. So their combinations are just not as fluent. They're just not as off. You know, they're not going to tee off as well. And that's when Josecito should jump all over him. And that just comes down and boils down to conditioning too. Because remember, it's not that easy. It sounds easy when we're talking about it, but it's not that easy to perform in the ring. It's way not that easy. I mean, he's going to have a bigger guy chasing him down. So he's going to have to be on his toes, and he's going to have to do something that Josecito hasn't really done in the past. You know, he was the aggressor when he fought Jesse Vargas. He was the aggressor when he fought, Victor Ortiz. They both were the aggressor. They were both going at each other. But this time around, he's going to have to tame the lion in his heart. He's going to have to use the ring around him and allow Canelo to be the dictator. He's basically throwing the rounds away in those first couple of rounds. If you want to be successful, try to take him out, beat him. Take the remainder of the rounds, you know, give them three rounds, fill them out, and then make them work, and then start working that body. That would be the game plan. Give them three rounds and then work nine rounds all the way down and see if you can secure nine rounds, you know. But it's a big task. That's something really huge to chew on. So we'll find out here on Leave the Ring. You want to call in? 347-215-7598. And I'm trying to find out, where are you at, Gabriel? It's like Waldo. Where are you, Waldo? So right now we're saying, like, where are you, the dark cloud? Where did you go? I have no clue right now what happened to Gabriel Montoya. He's missing in action. So I'm trying to find out right now what's going on with Gabriel Montoya. And it's always on Leaving the Ring. It never fails, man. Never fails on Leaving the Ring, and hopefully we can get him back on so that we can continue and move on with our next guest. And while we're waiting, we should be having another guest that's going to be calling on Leaving the Ring. Anyways, you want to call at 347-215-7598? You absolutely can. Let's talk some boxing. 3 hours of boxing talk here on Leaving in the Ring. I'd like to see Robert the Ghost Guerrero get back in there. You know, I know he was making his splash on that weigh-in with Chad Dawson and Andre Ward. So I know there was some exchange of words between him and Broner, and that's how Broner's keeping himself in the limelight in the boxing world. You know, he made his appearance, really surprising. I heard about it immediately after the Guerrero camp. His publicist called me up and told me about it, Mauro Serrano. And I was just like, you know what? Hate him or love him, this kid, he knows how to work it. He's Mr. Hype Man himself, you know. He knows how to be his own publicist and keep his name on there. So hopefully we find out what he's going to do next, even though a lot of us were, you know, our assumption is that it's not going to be any route between DeMarco and Guerrero. It wouldn't be a smart move. Why would they do that? You know, so anyways, we're waiting for Gabriel. We thought he was still on the air while he was talking with Virgil. you would think a guy that writes all the time would have some computer suave, but he doesn't. We got to help him out. Hey, I got to get my tower back on my computer here. He's telling me that I'm killing him. Come on, Gabe, call back in here. I'll leave him the ring. 347-215-7598. Let's talk some boxing. Come on, let's talk some boxing here on Leaving the Ring. Anyways, I like what Virgil was saying. You know, one thing about Virgil Hunter is that he's a guy that he takes a lot of time and thought of what he's going to do. He just doesn't mold his, you know, he just doesn't move forward and go fast. Hold on. Let me get him back on right now. Here on Leaving the Ring. Gabriel, I keep telling you to call back in.
No, you didn't tell me that we weren't on the air. That was a key piece of information that I would have liked to have known. I thought I was interviewing Virgil Hunter waiting for you to come back on the air.
No.
Okay.
Read the text, buddy. Call back in. I don't know how many other words to put it. Anyways, well, how did the interview go there?
It was great. It was in depth.
I didn't even
hang up with him. He and I got cut off just now. So I'm going to pass you the number. You handle it. I'll be right back.
Okay, go ahead and send it to me and see what I can do here. We do have John Scully scheduled to be on Leaving the Ring a little later, I believe at about 7 o'clock. But hopefully we can fit in another guest in between that or after here on Leaving the Ring Radio so we can chop it up. Things are over there popping in Las Vegas, so while Gabriel sends me the number, we'll see what we can do here on Leaving the Ring. Anyways, Well, Gabriel's sending me the number really quick here. I will set everything up here. 347-205-7598. You guys can call in. 3 hours of Box Talk. This is your host, Dave Duenas, and Gabriel Montoya, the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chen. I apologize for everything that's, you know, we don't know what happened here. So.
Yeah, you just kind of disappeared all. That's what I said. Like, you were like, you cut me off. I'm like, I didn't touch a thing. You just disappeared. That's really
No. I was talking about something else.
You were in our call for a second in the middle of our interview. I mean, you asked questions. That's what throws me. I don't know how we must have all of us gotten kicked off or something. I don't know.
No, I didn't get kicked off. We were still on the air. You fell off. You just all of a sudden you just dropped right off.
That's weird.
So,
he and I stayed connected.
Yeah. No, I kept going. And for a minute, I thought I got dropped off. So I was like, what the hell happened? You know, but then I noticed that I was still on the air. It was you this time around that was thrown off the air. So.
Well, okay. Well, I'm back. I've sent you the number. So let us try, Mr. Virgil Hunter, and actually get a quick interview in.
We're going to try. Why don't you go ahead and pick up from here while I do some magic.
Has the fight started yet? That's the other thing I'm trying to do. Let's find a stream. Dave, are you there?
It's me, Dave. It's me. Yeah, I'm trying to patch in Virgil Hunter, so I said go ahead and pick it up from there while I try to do what I got to do over here.
Gotcha. That's actually a good question. I was watching Doug Fisher on Twitter ask, why did HBO did not interview a great former fighter like Julian Jackson, who provided sparring partners for Martinez and was present? It is kind of strange. It was weird sitting at the Fortune Gym on Monday for the media day, and there in the locker room was Julian Jackson just kind of sitting there. And it's not like he looks different. Like, you know, a lot of old-time fighters, he's not really old-time. I mean, he's from prime time, you know, at least in my youth. But they'll look a little different. But Julian Jackson looks exactly the same. The flat top's a little gray, but it's still the same shape.
We kind of dropped off with you, brother. I'm going to patch you back in, okay? Hold on, give me a second. I'll patch you right back in.
And so I went in the back, you know, while the security force, which is very interesting. Is Virgil back with us?
And we got Virgil Hunter back with us live on Leaving the Ring. Virgil, are you there?
Yes, I am.
We did one of the better interviews no one will ever hear, apparently. We were off air. I appreciate you you being patient and giving us your time, Virgil. We're talking about the rumors of Angulo and Amir Khan, which is actually kind of funny. I think everybody missed a bit of comedy as you started interviewing me about Alfredo Angulo. So I guess why don't we readdress that really quick, that they're just strictly rumors, and how it is that you think that the rumor happened.
You know what? I don't know. That it's new to me. I am aware of the Angulo situation because I was called by somebody and asked me was I going to train Alfredo Angulo, and they brought my attention to the Ring magazine article, Ring TV, I believe it was. So, I mean, I just take it with a grain of salt. I mean, you know, I'm not saying it couldn't happen. Don't get me wrong,
right.
But it's a rumor, yeah. Yeah, it's a rumor.
Let me ask you something, Virgil. Because when a trainer becomes a hot commodity, and all kinds of fighters from all over the world, they want to pick up that knowledge. Do you think that that's something you have to be careful with? You can't spread yourself too thin?
Well, it depends on who you're training also. I think when you in a situation, it depends on what situation you're in. I think if you have a combination of amateurs and pros, fighters that you have to further develop instead of tweaking, I think it can definitely become a problem. You know, I had one of my old trainers told me once how important it was to have a stable if you had cream of the crop fighters and make sure that you had fighters in the same weight classes as your best fighters. And, you know, if you have that opportunity to be selective. And I think it would become a problem, again, if you had someone in their development stage, so to speak, an amateur coming out that you have to, you know, acclimate to the pro game and things like that, it could be a problem. And if you don't have your own gym, and if you don't have the sparring, I think other outside factors make it a problem. But if you have everything intact, I think it could actually be an asset to those fighters who are in your stable.
Let's talk out of that. Let's talk about some amateur fights here, you know, because, you know, Andre Ward was a gold medalist, and what happened with the Olympics this year, for this set of years right here, for 2012, a lot of Americans just really just kind of turned against it. What do you think is the problem with the male fighters in the Olympics? Because obviously the females had some greater success against what the males had accomplished in here. Do you think could there be a change and a fix that it can help out the youth? And how some folks are saying, let's cut this off, let's stop participating in the Olympics. Do you think that's the smartest thing to do?
No, not at all. I mean, look, man, the main issues of that situation is twofold. The first one is money. They don't have any money.
Yeah.
And so when you don't have any money, you can't develop the fighters like you're supposed to. Then they have no coverage, no exposure for the fighters to be motivated by. There was a time that ESPN showed the U.S. Championship, the U.S. Challenge, the Golden Gloves. I know when Andre was a J.O. fighter and we used to watch the senior divisions on ESPN, the Golden Gloves and the U.S. Championship. I mean, that was motivating to him to want to get there. Boy, you know, one day I can be on ESPN. I mean, at that time, those things were big. So they have no money to invest in the kids, to take them to dual meets, to have the right kind of camps and things that would benefit them. Number two, it's a lot of people at the top that shouldn't be there.
Hmm.
It's the same old concept. You have the good old boy fraternity at the top that are making a lot of decisions. You have dissension at the top. They don't seem to be able to keep anybody in place for any length of time, which indicates backbiting and suggest a lot of inner turmoil. They need to get rid of the board of directors and all these things that have have an opportunity to vote and alter things the way they want to alter it. And then they need to be real about a lot of other things. And the first thing they need to be real about is this. You have nothing but minorities boxing.
Right.
When you look at the United States Olympic team, you have Hispanic and you have African American. So there's no interest in sponsors or anything to give the money. Trust me, if they had four or five white kids on that team, it would be some money there. It would be some money on there. And it sounds like a race card play, but it's not. It's true.
Right.
They would have some money there. No other sport seems to have a problem getting money.
Right.
Except the team, okay? And then when you when they select the coaches, you have to be able to select the coaches according to what you have. There's no way you should have an African-American coaching Hispanic kids who are coming from a different system, a different way of fighting. And you should have Hispanic coaches on that team who know that style of fighting, who you know, that origin of fighting. And at the same time, you should have the appropriate coaches for the other athletes that know that style of fighting. So you can have the proper coaches in place. We're the only country, when you go to Russia, you have nothing but Russians fighting, so you have a system intact. When you go to Cuba, it's nothing but Cubans fighting, so you have a system intact. China, system intact. Thailand, system intact, because there's only Thailand kids on the team. Here in the United States, we have all cultures on the team. So
yeah, that's very true.
Things a little bit, you see. It complicates things a little bit. So if you have all cultures, you have to make sure that you have the right, so that you have different systems. You don't have one system. When you look at the Cubans, they all fight the same way. When
right.
you look at the Russians,
absolutely.
They all fight the same way. But our kids all fight different ways. They fight different ways.
Right.
You know, you have the slick in and out boxers coming from the East Coast and places like that. Then you have your more aggressive kids coming from California, the Hispanic kids. So you have a different set of athletes there. So you have to make sure you have the appropriate coaches. But you know, if you select an African American coach, he doesn't know anything about that style. How's he gonna coach it? And vice versa.
Yeah.
How's he going to coach it?
So much of boxing, too, is
but
about dealing
first,
with
yeah.
the raw material yeah. that you have, you know? Yeah, you're absolutely right. And if you got a guy that doesn't know how to adapt, a guy with slow feet but heavy, you know, a left hook to the body, classic Mexican, this could be a problem.
Exactly.
I felt like the fighters were all kind of fighting on emotion, too. I thought it was a very young team in the way they fought. The first round was not just of the fights, but the first round of fights. Everybody that did well, it was like sheer aggression, just going out there and throwing it all against the wall. You can't sustain that over the whole Olympics. I mean, you know that from experience. You have to be very surgical and understand exactly what it is that you're doing. You guys planned it out down to the weight class that you decided to compete in. Do you think it's something that training-wise, we're going to have to, similar to the way we did USA basketball, although there's a lot more money there, really invest in the next 4 years and really take a whole overhaul kind of approach, that this is the team we're going to put together, this is how we're going to develop them over the next 4 years, and this is how we're going to win, especially because they're going to go pro rules anyways from now on.
You know, it could still be the same result, and the reason why is that because with entities like IEBA, who set all the rules and things, again, they know that there is cultural differences on our team. So all they have to do is implement a set of rules.
Right.
To undermine the success of the team. That's all they have to do. For instance, you couldn't have a coach in the corner if he had pros. But the amateurs over there are pros. So now you have coaches like Barry Hunter, you have coaches like Mike Stafford, and Luna and top coaches, but they happen to have pros, so they eliminate them from the corner.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's true.
You cut down your knowledge. First of all, the kids are not going to go anywhere unless they respect the coaches. That's first and foremost.
That's
not,
first,
if
yeah.
they don't respect the coaches, you can forget it. I don't care how good they are if they don't respect the coaches. Second,
yeah.
you put a patchwork team together at the last minute. That they were doomed to fail.
Mm-hmm.
They were doomed to fail.
Yeah, I agree.
And these things carried on for years leading up to the Olympics. So it shows it showed a system that is in complete disarray, that they couldn't even bring everything into focus 1 year out when they should have done it 2 years out. But, you know, at least 1 year have everything in order and in line. They couldn't even do that.
Hmm.
You know,
right.
And then the situation, you know, when Freddie went up there and these things, that threw another iron in the fire that probably shouldn't have been there.
Yeah.
You see, so it you know, when Freddie went up there, it undermined the coach who was already in place.
I agree. It was like I didn't really understand that move at all. You know,
right. Yep.
Freddie's style is not anything close to an amateur style. You know, you're
well,
also dealing with two different cultures.
Successful amateur. He's never coached a successful amateur in his life.
Right. Right.
So what he says to the top coaches. You take a guy like Barry Hunter, Mike Stafford, who have world champions, but also had amateur champions. What does that say to them?
Yeah, they're like, where were you? Yeah. No,
and
it's not Freddie's
fault. It's not Freddie's fault. Again, you go to the people who are in place.
Mm-hmm.
The people who make the decision.
Yep.
It's not Freddie's fault.
No. I think it was more of trying to get a household name to be there. You know what I mean?
And particularly
so,
a guy.
So whether they had ideas of fundraising, whether they had ideas of whatever the purpose was, they didn't realize that it was a tremendous slight to your coaches who have proven themselves in that amateur system. And like I said, it's not Freddie's fault, but the fact is, he hasn't had one national champion as an amateur. Well, he's had seven. So what does that say?
Yeah.
We know.
Let me ask you.
System. Go ahead.
We're up against the hour. We got another interviewee coming up. I really, again, your time is very valuable, and I like Dave said, I always feel like I learned something coming out of this. Let me ask you your prediction for the weekend. I think we all kind of know about Josecito Lopez and Saul Alvarez, but the fight of the weekend, Martinez-Chavez, who are you picking?
Well, you know, I'm not picking an individual, but, you know, my decision is based on the course of the fight. I think the first four rounds will make a good determination on who possibly could come out victorious. I think that if Junior can disrupt Sergio's rhythm and still have him thinking and guessworking in that span of four rounds or five rounds, that he has a good chance of pulling it off if his stamina can hold up. Make no mistake about it, he's going to have to exhibit stamina that we haven't seen before in order to pull this fight off. He's not going to be able to fight in spurts. He's going to have to put continuous effective pressure. And what I mean by that is, it's one thing to come forward, but if you're coming forward and getting smacked, that's not going to work either. So he's going to have to be able to put effective pressure on Martinez, not walking forward, taking punishment, but walking forward, avoiding punishment and you know, inflicting punishment in return. If Martinez gets into a rhythm, whether Junior is coming forward or whatever he's doing in the ring, then it's just a matter of time. I think he'll discourage the kid because, you know, he hasn't been in a situation yet where he's taking a beating.
Right.
And, you know, you're gonna see him react to that. He's going to have to show some kind of reaction to this beating he's taking. I mean, this is going to be brand new to him. I mean, you know, to really get hit, not to hit back.
Right. I'm gonna have to interrupt it. We're gonna have to let you go, brother. We appreciate you calling in because we got the next guest who's talking the whole thing, all that, and they gotta
speaking
go.
Speaking of Freddie Roach, he's actually on the line. Virgil,
on the line.
Again, Virgil, congratulations. You showed why you're Trainer of the Year, and I think you might be looking at another one in years to come here. Thank you again. I appreciate it. And we'll get you back on very, very soon.
Thank you, Virgil.
Gentlemen, you guys have a good evening. Thank you.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Take care, sir. All right, man. Bye.
So let's patch in. Let's patch in Freddie Roach. Freddie, are you there?
Yeah.
Hey, Freddie, how you doing, brother?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing good, man. Good. Hey, thanks for taking the time. I know you probably have a crazy week here, and you're in Vegas right now with your fighter. So, you know, you've been here before, big, big fights. But this is really the first time, I think, not in terms of big crowd, but your fighter Julio Cesar Chavez being in a big, big fight. How are you guys feeling? Are you there, Freddie? Hold on. Are you there, Freddie? Sorry about that. Go ahead.
Can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay, let me put Freddie on.
Okay.
Yeah, Chavez is looking really good. He's ready for this fight. He's 2 pounds overweight. His weight's never been this low. He's in great shape, and we're ready for this big crowd.
You know that 24/7 always kind of throws things out there. You know, makes people kind of have their own ideas. And before it looked like it was good for the sport. And it looked like you liked it. What about now? Have your feelings changed about it? You know, does it. Just add more stress to what's going on in your camp. How do you feel about it?
Not really. You know, we show them what we want. So, you know, the thing is they didn't get my car and follow me to Julio's house. And I trained them at the house at 3 till 3 in the morning. So, you know, we worked a little bit unorthodox, but we get to work in. I mean, if it wasn't in the gym, we worked at the house. It wasn't at the house. We went to the gym, so it worked out really well. I mean, as long as I get to work, and I didn't care where we worked. You know, I'd rather be in the boxing gym because it's my comfort zone. But the living room is okay too.
But you know, big criticism in the beginning. A lot of folks, you know, 3-4 years ago said this wasn't a fight for you guys to take on. But now this is a fight. You know, I mean, a lot of us are very excited. Chavez definitely has a big chance of stopping Sergio Martinez. He's a big kid. What do you think he brings the most into this fight against Sergio Martinez now?
Well, the thing is, you got to bring his strength and his size and use it and be rough with this guy, rough him up, take him out of his comfort zone. If he takes him out of his comfort zone, you know, Martinez, he's not the toughest guy in the world. He's not really a hard, hard guy. He just has great speed and he's a great athlete, but I don't see him as a great boxer. So he's going to run. We got to cut the ring off. We can't follow him. We have a great game plan down. He knows when the guy's resting. When he rests, we're going to attack him. When he's trying to rest, and when he's trying to walk us into the big left hand, we know when that happens also, and we're not going to follow him. We're going to cut the ring off, and so I think we have a good plan for whatever he brings.
How you doing, Freddie? It's Gabe Montoya. Hey man, I'll probably see you in a few hours. I'll be out there heading out there tomorrow night. But let me ask you this. Is that you were talking about the following around? Is that the hardest thing? Because Chavez is he's had developmental fights where he's always the bigger guy and he can kind of walk through whatever and just go right in and dig at a guy's body, similar to the way he did with Andy Lee and others. Is that the hardest thing, is to make him kind of respect the speed and power and angles of Martinez and to be a little more cautious as, in his approach?
Well, the thing is, with his approach, it's okay as long as he stays in front of him. But if he gets behind him and follows him, he'll walk into the left hand. So we know that, and he knows exactly what I'm talking about, and we've been going over in the ring. And, you know, the thing is, I told him, you got a great chin, but let's keep that a secret, and don't even give this guy a chance to hit you with that big left hand. So, you know, the guy circles, and gets you kind of lackadaisical and you walk into the shot, but we're not going to follow that. And then when he drops his hands, I mean, he wants to rest a little bit. When he drops his hand, I go right down the middle and hit him down the middle and beat his body up. So I think Julio inspiring is he showed me that he knows the game plan, he knows how it's going to work, and I think we're 100% ready for the fight.
Every fighter is different. They all come with their own interesting different things or peccadilloes. Obviously, this I find it funny that HBO has chosen to and media has chosen to take Chavez Jr. working out in the middle of the night or in his living room or the way he wants to as lazy. But then when they do a Floyd Mayweather 24/7 and he's running at 2 a.m., they say when everybody else is sleeping, Floyd's working. What do you think that is?
That's one thing about Julio. Once we start working, no matter if it's in the living room, the kitchen, or the swimming pool, wherever it may be, or the boxing gym, once he starts, we get a three-hour workout, and it's 100%. And he gives me all he needs to give. I mean, he gives me 100%, and he works his ass off. And the thing is, you know, like 24/7, I mean, when he didn't show up at the gym that day, I mean, but he just thinks we're not training and so forth. I think he's taking the fight lightly. He's in for a big surprise.
Everything's cyclical in this sport. You know, the Kronk was the great gym. Now it's the wild card. Even within that, there's peaks and valleys. And you guys have had a little bit of a rough go. The Amir Khan letdown, Linares, and the Pacquiao, even though everybody, including myself, believes he won that fight with Bradley. Do you start to look at yourself and kind of wonder, what am I doing differently? You know, why am I coming up losing as opposed to winning the way I was in recent years? Do you even think about that heading into a fight like this?
No, you know, the thing is, you know, winning and losing is part of life. And, you know, I wish I could win them all, but, evidently that's not possible. So, you know, try to get the fighters to follow the instructions and so forth. And it's working. Dealing with world champions is, you know, a little bit different than working with an ordinary guy. So you kind of, I wouldn't stay up till 3 in the morning with just anybody. But but the thing is, again, winning and losing is part of life, and it's part of the game. And I mean, you know, we were on a great run for a while there, and now we've lost two fights in a row. So I told Julio, I said, Julio, I need you to win this fight. I said, because I want to win Trainer of the Year again. So, you know, all those, it's all in who you're training. And the thing is, it's not up to me to win the fight. It's up to the fighter. You know, Manny said it best. He says, my job, it's your job to get me ready for the fight, Freddie. It's my job to win the fight. And that's 100% correct. It is the fighter's responsibility to win the fight. I can't fight the fight for them.
Freddie, why Marquez again for another round for Pacquiao? What happened with the Bradley fight? Do you guys just look at it as a win and say, forget it, let's go after Marquez, the guy that's been giving us fits every time around?
Well, I wanted Bradley, and the thing is, I actually won that fight before to get that off our back, but the thing is, I am happy with that, him choosing the fight, because that means he wants to fight him. And the thing is, our training camp is going to be in L.A. 100%, not in the Philippines at all. We're going to be in L.A. the whole time. And, you know, I told Manny, I said, if you want to be number one again, pound for pound, you got to knock this guy out. And I said, you know, after the last fight, you promised me you'd knock the next guy out, and I'm going to hold him to it. And no one missed a night, so I told him. I said, you know, in the gym, he still has all the ability, and he's not slacking off at all, and he's not shot or nothing like that. He looks really, really good. And I just told me he just has to carry that over into the fight. And when you hurt somebody in the fight, don't touch gloves with them. Knock the fucker out.
There you go. I got one more question for you, Freddie, before we let you go, because I know you've had a long day, a long month with this fight leading up on Saturday night. Could you squash the Mirkhan rumors? Did he leave you, or did you guys, still strong as ever?
Mirkhan's people call me tonight, and they want to have. I'm talking to Amir tomorrow. But I was told that they want me to make him number one.
Yeah,
and
but
leave
there?
Back
did, that, did he lose Freddie Roach?
Yeah.
No, he's still there. Freddie?
Yeah,
I can hear you.
I believe we did.
Yeah. So
no,
I will be singing to Amir tomorrow. So I heard that he's going to let me go, but nothing's official yet.
Well, cool.
Okay.
Well, I appreciate it, Freddie, and good luck in the big fight, man. I think it's just anybody can win. You know, it's the best kind of fight. It's a historic fight, and it's going to show whether or not Chavez Jr. is for real. Or I think even in losing to a guy like Martinez, it's going to show all the great things about him. It's just what boxing's all about. So wish you all the luck, and thank you for giving us the time.
Okay, well, I'm back here. I apologize. Anyways, can you hear me here? Gabe, you there?
I can hear you.
Okay. So, end up hitting the button by accident, hanging up on myself. It's a tablet,
nice.
And it's really sensitive. Thing sucks. Anyways, that was Freddie Roach. We had him on, and I think he was able to answer a lot of the questions that we wanted to have answer. I believe we were supposed to have John Scully on the Iceman with us next. Are we calling him in, Gabe, or how are we doing this?
Yeah, let me pass over the number just 1 second.
You know, I'm surprised they didn't take on that Bradley fight next and the Marquez one. You know, I mean, Marquez was guaranteed you're going to have some action there. These guys were just made for each other, you know. I mean, every fight out was pretty close. I thought this last time they had stepped in with each other, was a little bit more convincing that Marquez took the fight, had won that fight. So it's going to be one of those things again. Freddie Roach asking for a knockout. He's been asking for a knockout over Marquez for, you know, the last couple other fights, you know what I mean, Gabe? But I don't know if he's ever going to get that knockout over Juan Marquez.
Well, I think the I really do enjoy the fact that he said they're going to do training camp in Los Angeles. No more Mr. Nice Guy. You know, enough of this distraction. You've had it your way. Now it's time to get back to business. I think that'll do something for Manny. Granted, you know, he's got all those obligations all the time and the celebrity and everything. But, you know, the difference between him and Floyd is that he's handling it. And Floyd, you know, always is in shape. And Manny, I don't think he's handling it. I don't think he's out of shape, but there's just something missing. Maybe he's getting old. I don't know. But he's had it his way, and I think, you know, it's time that the trainer had his way. Enough of the 4 weeks in the Philippines because that's what you want to do. Get back to how it used to be when you live next door and you first walk through the wild card. In order to be the guy like Marquez, you know, probably sits up at night wondering new ways to try to beat you. He does have to knock him out. Just once and for all, get it done. You know, do something spectacular.
You know,
we need to get excited about this guy again. You know, we're not.
Absolutely. You know, and just really quick, I want to thank Marie, who set it up, you know, with Freddie Roach, and you know, she always puts it in, and Fred as well, who hit me up and asked about if we could interview him with, you know, with Freddie, and being that he's in Las Vegas, and his fighter, I consider his biggest fight for his career, not for Freddie. You know, Freddie's been there, even though Julio has had. He's had the experience of big fights because of his father, and even when he fights in Mexico, it's almost with the crowd showing up. It's almost like he is at a big fight. So, but this is something different. And while I'm going to call in John here, my co-host is going to continue talking about some boxing here and talk a little bit more about – I want to know what your thoughts about what Freddie was saying about the 24/7 and working out in the middle of the night, you know, with him in the living room, the kitchen, by the pool, the whole works.
I imagine he's not as happy or go lucky about it as he was pretending. But you know, what are you going to do? Like I said, every camp has its own culture. You know, every camp is like a mini kingdom. It's got and it sometimes has a crazy king or a king that just wants to do what he wants to do. Look at Floyd. Look at Manny. Now look at Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. He knows what's up. He knows exactly who he is. And that this is all for him. The fight is for him to win. He's got an aging champion that moves a lot, that he can wear down. I don't think it's that big of a deal that he trains in the living room or wherever, because like you said, when he bears down to train, he gets after it. And you can see that in the footage on 24/7. He still gets after it. Now, is it ideal? Is it the same? He's working out at a sweaty-ass gym where it's all hot, like a little box, and you're sweating everything out the same way as, you know, Martinez is doing? No, it isn't. And I asked Martinez about that, working at different camps. He worked at three different gyms for this camp. And for him, he got used to three different rings. He took the positive and kind of keeps you fresh. So,
we have a scheduled interview. Hey, I'm going to catch you in right now.
Oh, good. There he is.
Okay, and we have John with us, Iceman, here on Leaving the Ring. What's up, brother? How you doing, man? Thanks for taking the time to speak to us here.
How's it going?
We're doing good, man. How you doing?
You know, just getting back in the swing of things, you know, in the gym here. I've got some amateur fights actually tomorrow I have to go to. So, you know, everything's all right.
You know, tough break on Saturday night. You guys were saying you were ready. We're going to get in there. We're going to do what we got to do. Training camp was fine. Weight was shedding fine. What went wrong in your thoughts, and what do you believe went wrong on Saturday night?
I mean, you know what? Let me just say this. It's kind of funny. I was thinking about this actually a couple weeks before the fight, and you know, so, and somebody, I don't know if it was you or, you know, I talked to quite a few reporters over the course of a few weeks, and every one of them asked what they've asked for years before a fight. They say, you know, how's everything going? How's everything going? You know, how do you feel? And as I was saying, you know, I feel great, you know, everything's perfect, you know, we're going. And I realized, like, for the last 20-something, 28 years that I've been in boxing as a fighter and a trainer, that's what we always say. Like, it's
right.
Almost pointless to ask, because that's what we always say. And it dawned that it was kind of funny, because I was saying to myself, man, like the last person that asked me before the fight, they go, oh, you know, how's everything going? And I go, great, great, you know, everything's great. And then I was just laughing to myself. I was going, what do these people expect me to say? Like this, nobody in history has ever said, you know, I'm not really feeling that good. I mean, you know, I'll be lucky to make it out of the second round. You know what I mean? Like, it's just,
yeah,
you know, it's just never happened. You know what I mean?
I'm amazed
so it's
that
almost
I'm here.
Pointless
yeah.
to ask. Right. You know, it's like you're really asking me how I feel. Because the fact of the matter is, and this is, you know, every fighter will tell you this, like, a fighter could get hit by a car the day before a fight and be in the hospital all night, and then they let him out. It's all right, you know, we're going to let you do it. You know, and you go to the fight. And you ask him, how do you feel? You know what he's going to say? Feel great. Everything's great. You know, they always want to, you know, because if they don't say they feel great, then that
right.
makes it reality. You know what I mean? It's just it's a funny thing.
Right.
Yeah?
You know what, John? When you came on, I gave you my opinion. I said that, you know, in boxing history, seeing a guy leave
a division, to jump up in weight, and then starts campaigning. Jumping back down, it's always one of the toughest things to do. You know, I was never sold, even though you guys were saying that it was working out. I wasn't sold until I saw that first bell being rung. Then I was going to go off of what we were going to see. I honestly got to tell you, I kept saying this over and over to even my co-host, Gabriel, and the other people. I said, it's hard for me to believe that he's going to be fine dropping down the weight at 168, even though he had campaigned there, because history has shown it over and over and over. Boxers don't do well when they decide to go back to a division that they hadn't campaigned in a while.
Right. No, you're right. And I struggled with it just because my instincts, you know, when the first day months ago when they told me that this was the idea, if you go by my first 1 second response, what was the first thing that popped into my head? You know, I was like, no way, you know, like, this isn't good. You know, and then I actually had a good friend of mine, one of the boxing people I really respect, the trainer, and he called me, you know, a couple months ago, and he's like, what are you guys doing? Like, this is crazy. He goes, there's no way you're going to make the weight. And I'm like, well, the nutritionist said this and that. He goes, I don't care what he said. He goes, I don't care what he said. He goes, there's no way you guys are going to make this weight and be strong. He was so adamant about it, you know, and that actually, you know, he actually popped into my head several times, during the course of the training. And I'll tell you one thing, and I know this from experience for myself. I had fights where they offered me a fight, and I said, okay, yeah, I'll take it. All right, you got to be this. You got to be 168 or whatever the weight was, you know, in 7 weeks. And I go, oh, yeah, that's fine. That's great. That's plenty of time. You know, I'm going to lose all the weight. It'd be great. And what happened more often than not is 3 weeks in, you're saying to yourself, man, it's a little harder than I thought it was going to be. And 4 weeks in, you're like, the weight isn't really dropping like quite as, you know, at the rate that I hoped it would. And then 6 weeks in, you're like, oh, man, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? This is crazy. Why did I do this? And then a week before the fight, you're going, I wish they would cancel the fight. I wish the guy would get hit by a bus. Like, it's just so crazy. It sneaks up on you. One thing I always tell my fighters, when the fight is 6 weeks away, I say, listen, you know, you're going to wake up tomorrow and you're going to be in the dressing room. I say, don't think you have a long time, because that's how the training is going to go. It's going to go by in a blink of an eye. And, I think what happened was, you know, in the beginning, we felt the weight was a great idea. I talked to the strength coach, basically. I went to him. I said, look, I said, all BS aside, this is just me and you talking. I said, is he going to make this weight? Are you sure he can do this? And he said, oh, no problem. We'll cut this, and we'll do this, and we'll run this. And I said, okay, you know, whatever you say. And, like around halfway through the camp, it kind of dawned on me that, you know, as I said earlier, you know, things just weren't quite up to the schedule I was hoping for. And the worst thing that can happen is when a training camp turns into a weight loss camp where everything is basically built around losing pounds as opposed to working on a strategy. Because, like, for example, say I want to spar, I want to have my guy spar 12 rounds on Wednesday, but his weight is a little heavy, so he's got to run on Wednesday. Well, now he's ran 5 miles this morning, and now he's got a spar, and he didn't get that rest he needed because he can't afford to take the rest, so now the sparring doesn't go as well. So his confidence is a little affected. But he's got to run the next morning. He can't even rest, because if he rests, and his scale is going to go up. So, you know, the weight affects so many things in the course of a training camp and in the course of a fighter's preparation in a matter of his confidence and all those type of things. So let's just say that it affected us more than we hoped it would.
Do you think, I mean, during the fight, you know, I know there was one, there was a criticism about, like you and I talked about this, the criticism that you weren't giving enough technical advice in the corner, you know, slip this way when he looks at you this way and come back with this punch, all the armchair Eddie Futch's kind of hitting you. Talk to me a little bit about that, because you did definitely take almost more of a Teddy Atlas kind of more of an emotional let me, or Ann Wolf does this sometimes too, of getting to the core of the guy and trying to bring something else out, because he wasn't really responding. It seemed after round three, he became more mentally out of it or listless in the fight.
Right.
What was your assessment?
And my assessment is this, I pride myself on knowing the boxing game inside and out. And I mean from the standpoint of, from the viewpoint of being a boxer. So when people listen to the corner, not just my corner, but any corner, and they listen and they hear the stuff and they go, oh, that's not right what he told him. That's not, he shouldn't have told him that. He should have told him something else. You know, it's like you don't know the guy. You don't know the trainer. You don't know the fighter. You don't know his situation at that moment. You don't know what the trainer sees. You don't know what the fighter went through to get to that point and why he's reacting the way he is. To anyone that says I should have gave more technical advice, which I gave technical advice, I gave him what I felt he needed to get through that. I couldn't get too deep because the fact of the matter is, once he got knocked down, you have to talk to a doctor or whoever could verify this. I mean, when you're losing weight and, you lose fluid around your brain, so when you get dropped, you're halfway towards a concussion already without the fact that you've been losing weight and your brain is affected. So I knew from looking at him and just from knowing the situation and just knowing him and the way he was reacting, he wasn't going to hear technical instructions. It would have fallen on deaf ears. I would have wasted precious time. And the only reason I could have done that was to sound smart. I could have made everybody say, oh, John gave great advice. Chad just didn't listen to it. It was beyond that. Like, he wasn't going to listen to it. I didn't want to waste my time telling him something I knew he was never going to do. He was not going to be able to do. I needed to tell him some real basic stuff. I mean, I told him, keep stepping around. Don't stand right in front of this guy. I don't want you to get caught flush, but it reached the point where I needed to reach him on a really emotional level, on a mental level. I had to dig deep, and it was more of an emotional thing. It wasn't a technical thing at that point. It would have been a waste of time for me to do that. And it's like, Chad wasn't this bad off, but you take like the fight with Gerald McClellan and Nigel Benn and the way it ended up for Gerald. Five rounds earlier, even people need to realize like Gerald wasn't hearing anything. He knew something was, wrong with him from making the weight and from getting hurt in the fight and getting hit with big shots. They had to pull him through. He wasn't hearing technical advice. So, I made what I guess is a judgment call. I mean, I knowing fighters and knowing Chad the way I do, I didn't want to waste time trying to sound like a smart guy in there. I wanted to give him something that I felt he could use at that moment, and that's what I did.
Have you spoken to Chad after? I mean, how was he taking it? What by now do you think is in hold of his future, or do you think that he just needs a break and kind of reflect on what happened on Saturday night?
I think he needs a break. I mean, and I'll tell you why. Just from a physical standpoint, losing the weight the way he did and then receiving the type of fight he did and the punishment he received and, physically and mentally and, his pride is hurt, I'm sure. So he needs to recover his body the same way Roy Jones needed to do when he came down and he fought Tarver, and then he went and fought Glenn Dotson right away after that. He never gave himself a chance to really heal. And healing like that isn't really a visual thing. It's a deep-rooted, some of it's mental, that needs to be repaired. So if it's my suggestion, I say Chad shouldn't fight for a good while. He should recover and get himself back together, start back slow, get his confidence back in the training. He's going to have to defend his light heavyweight title. He needs to be impressive. He needs to, make a statement with whoever he fights. He needs to show people the difference between 168 and 175.
In that fight, I completely agree with you. Anybody can say you should have done this, you could have done that, but until you're in that position, until you're in that moment, it could have been a million different scenarios, but what is done is done. Looking back at that fight, John, and this is one of those scenarios, you could say the same thing, you can say, well, yeah, I could have done that.
was it the best idea for Dawson to stop the fight, or do you think you should have stopped it earlier?
I mean, you know, for better or worse, I've only stopped two fights in my life. You know, and that was one guy who was just a preliminary guy, and he was just outgunned by a bigger guy. You know, it's a 6-round fight in Boston. And then Jose Rivera, when he fought Daniel Santos, I stopped that fight because, you know, I didn't feel that Jose was, you know, strong enough that night to win it. And he had actually stated a couple of days before the fight that he retired. He was going to retire after the fight no matter what. So once a fighter says that, he's basically already retired. And, you know, I didn't feel like he needed to get hurt. You know, the thing with Chad is, you know, he was still, you know, moving, still like alert enough to move. It was later in the fight, in the corner, he didn't give me any indication that he wanted to stop. That was like actually him sitting on the stool. He just seemed like I say, he needed a mental boost. He didn't seem really physically sagging. You know, it's a judgment call. I mean, if I stopped it, the fact of the matter is I'm sure a lot of people would have jumped on me about that and said, you know, I mean, the guy was, you know, he was losing, but he wasn't, you know, he wasn't out on his feet. He wasn't getting dropped 10 times.
But he was performing at a level that, right. that he nobody's ever seen him do. I mean you know him better than anybody else, you know,
right.
You're his trainer, you know what I mean?
Right. Well, two things that come to mind. I mean, one is that, you know, it's a tough spot to be in. I'll tell you why, because
right.
Once you stop it, that's it. It's over. Like, you can't go back, you know, at all. Like to this day, you know, sometimes when I stopped that fight with Jose, and Jose was mad at me for a long time about stopping that fight. It's like, to this day, you know, he didn't want me to stop it. And, you know, I question myself. I say, man, you know, could he have kept going? You know, maybe I shouldn't have stopped it when I did. And the good thing was we had Steve Smoger as a ref, who I think Steve is the best referee in the world. I was very happy and almost excited that he was the referee, because I've always said I thought Steve is the best guy out there. And I just felt like Steve is, you know, actually more experienced, obviously, in the fights like this. It's his job to see it. He sees it differently than, you know, he's not partial to anyone. So he sees it a little more clearer than the corner might. Sometimes the corner is overprotective, sometimes it's underprotective, and you know, I didn't want to be one or the other. So I kind of was happy Steve was there, because I relied on him. I felt like if he's the type of guy, if he felt like, John, you should stop, like, he would use my name. He would tell me, John, you know, maybe I'll think about stopping this. So I kind of deferred to him in that, and Steve, you know, gave me no indication that he felt it should be stopped. And again, for better or worse, maybe it's a flaw, but, you know, I'm just the type of guy, I always see a light at the end of the tunnel. I just, you know, I wanted Chad to, you know, to dig down and just come up with something spectacular. So, you know, it's something I live with. I mean, I stand by what I did. I mean, we kept it going. Nobody, you know, nobody in my corner. Nobody. I didn't hear anybody in the crowd. None of our supporters. I didn't hear anybody say anything about stopping it. Maybe you should stop it. So, you know, it is what it is. I mean, I stand by what I did, and you know, I'll live with that.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's a tough decision. You know, when Chad got hurt that last time, I just thought.
I would have stopped it then. Well, I'll tell you
right now. Were you thinking about it then at that point? That's, I mean,
right.
When you're having moment.
I'm sorry to interrupt. But actually, it comes to, now that you mention it, actually, if you watch, I don't know if you can see it on the film, I haven't seen the fight, but I actually stood up, and when I saw him wobbling, I actually turned to my guys, and I go, oh, man, he's hurt bad, because he was like standing in the middle of the ring like a horse trying to count with his foot, you know what I mean? You know?
And
I jumped up. And before I could say anything, Steve, you know, started giving him the eight count. And I was actually watching really closely, and now that you mention it, I was watching really closely, and I was going to say to myself, let me see what he looks like when the response comes. Like, Steve, I know at some point Steve's going to ask him a question. I want to see what he does and what he says, and then I might stop it. And before I think we'd even got to that point, the fight was stopped. So actually come to think of it, now that you actually refresh my memory, I actually might have stopped it right there, depending on, because I'm sure Steve was going to tell him, walk a couple steps towards me, let me see what your legs look like. So I guess it was Ted decided, he's taking a lot of heat for quitting. And, people say, you're not supposed to quit. And I do get that, but,
it felt logical to me. The room that I was watching it in, nobody had a problem with it. They were like, the fight, to me, hit a logical conclusion, and it was done.
You'd be amazed at the people that are ripping him for stopping. And I'm just saying, I'm like, you can't please anybody, because if you stop, like I had a guy tell me, that a friend of mine, he told me that I should have told Dawson, just run for the last three rounds. Just get through the rounds and lose a decision. And I said, that sounds good. And that's a great plan. And it would have worked. He could have ran and, held and all that kind of stuff. I said, but I would have, he would have got crucified. People would have said he robbed them of their money. It would have been worse than when De La Hoya ran against Trinidad for the last three rounds. So, you're always going to, no matter what happens, if he got knocked out in 10 seconds or if he won a unanimous decision and beat Andre Ward, there's a lot of people that aren't going to like the end result, and you definitely can't please everybody.
That's funny. I honestly thought that it was a great call from his side. You know what I mean? I mean, I looked at it was, I saw Chad Dawson. His legs weren't there. He was getting hit with punches that normally wouldn't rock him. I was talking about this earlier. Ward is not known to be a big puncher, and when he's getting caught like that over and over and he's getting wobbled, I was like, man, he's done. It's over. If he's got no legs to hold up to Ward's punches, he's not going to have any legs to get him off and land a big shot.
Right. Well, that's, like I say, the first time it became, for me, in the corner, like blatantly obvious. And I'll say two things. One, the first time it became blatantly obvious for me was that last series of punches, like the way he wobbled was different than the other ways that he had wobbled. But the other thing, and this is why you need a really good referee, as a fighter, and especially a guy like me, I'm competitive, and I'm one of those guys, like, you got to make it through the 12 rounds at all, even in sparring. Like, I don't allow my guys to quit. I don't care what's wrong with them. Like, if we're going to do 12, we're going to do 12. You're going to find a way to survive. And so having that mindset that I do, sometimes maybe I don't see the stress as magnified as other people do. Like caring people who have no interest in either guy, they could say, that guy's hurt. Like, they should stop it. Where me, I'm looking at it like, no, he's got to suck it up. He's got to, he's a champion. He's got to make, I come from that old school, like, Archie Moore, when he fought Rocky Marciano, and the legend has it that they wanted to stop it before the last round, and Archie Moore told the referee, I'm a champion too. He said, he told him, let me get knocked out. Like, don't stop. Let me in. The referee said, okay, Archie, you're the champ. And Archie went out and got knocked out. He'd rather get knocked out than retire on the stool. And that's kind of always been my thing. And for better or worse, I'm always trying to push my guys to the limit. And so as a result, I'll be honest. Sometimes people like me, our eyes can get clouded almost. Like, I'm sure if I watch that fight on TV, if I watch the tape of it, I'll probably be a little surprised at how much more hurt he appeared to be than what I saw that night, because I'm trying to project a warrior mentality, and I'm always all about finishing and fighting through, and even up to the last round, I'm talking about winning by a last round knockout. Mike Weaver and John Tate, just pulling it out of the hat somewhere. And so I'll have to see the tape and try to look at it through impartial eyes.
Yeah, I'm curious, if moving forward, if that's – somebody today was asking me. I was on a radio show doing an interview, and they said, do we do this fight again at 175 just to kind of prove the point? I'm not sure, I think, like you said, Chad needs to take some time to reestablish himself.
Couldn't be like that. Somebody asked me, like, he should just have him come up to that. I said, not the next fight. I go, we wouldn't want it. I wouldn't want it at all. I think if if Chad comes back, I remember when Tommy Hearns got knocked out by Hagler, and everyone was like, oh, Hearns is done. That was brutal. He can't handle the weight. And in his next fight, he knocked out undefeated James Shuler with one punch in the first round. And, you know, he was like, I'm back. You know, I'm back. I told you I had a broken hand against Hagler, and it was a fluke, and I'm back. And a lot of people believed him. So, you know, I think if Chad takes the proper rest and if he comes back and, say, he fights Tavoris Cloud, and, you know, I believe truly, not even if I don't train Chad, I believe truly that Chad at his best, you know, practically tortures Tavoris Cloud and wins that fight very convincingly. And if he did that, that would spark the interest and the idea that, yeah, maybe the weight was an issue, and maybe that might entice Andre Ward to want to go after his title. And any doubters of Andre's, which, you know, I don't think there's going to be many, but if some, you know, there's going to be at least one guy on the planet who tells Andre, I don't know, man, I think I'm 175. You might have a problem with that kid, especially after the way he beat Cloud or whoever he beats. So it's a possibility. But as his trainer, and, you know, I certainly wouldn't want to go back in with Ward right away. That's for sure.
Well, John, I really appreciate your candor, man. You really, you know, we're just straightforward with us. I appreciate that, you know. I look forward to your next piece of work and talking to you again. Who you got this weekend, by the way?
You know what? I think Chavez is really hungry and game. And, you know, I think he's not buying into the hype. I think he's going to bring it. I think he's going to give a great fight. But my gut feeling just – I think Chavez, Martinez, with his, you know, herky-jerky style and his boxing, you know, I think that style is tough for anybody, and it might be really tough for a guy like Chavez who's going to try and get to the body, and he might not be able to get to the body. If I was to guess, I think Martinez is going to outbox him and you know.
Yeah, I think that's where I'm leaning, too, you know, but I think anything can happen. I think it's a dangerous fight. I think particularly down the stretch, it's going to be anybody's game, you know. So we'll see, you know. Somebody just distracted me with the text. I see a few scenarios. I think maybe, you know, Martinez dialed in really early, lets it go a little bit too much, tires in the middle of the fight. Chavez Jr. comes back. Starts to grind to his body, and then the fight's just on the table coming down the stretch, and Youth gets served with Chavez Jr. overtaking him. Or, you know, Martinez is just simply too much and just outworks him throughout, batters him, and stops him late. Those are like kind of the two that I see, you know. I don't know. I can't wait. I'm going to be in Vegas for it, so I can't wait to
get there. Oh, really? Yeah, that's the, well, you know, yeah. The fact that you could see both scenarios tells you that it's a good, interesting fight to be at, because – you know, you can see two possible ways that it goes. I mean, I think more and more people are buying into Chavez than ever before. I think a year ago he was considered, you know, like a joke. And then, you know, with his last couple fights, it's like, man, you know, this kid learned how to fight, and he's got confidence, and he believes, you don't believe it, he believes it, and that's all that matters. So I think he's going to make a good account for himself. Win or lose, I think he's going to be right there.
Yeah. I think
it's going to be a good fight, man.
it really is. It's hard to also, you go top rank, old champion versus young rising champion. He's giant for the weight class. You know he's going to move up at least one time, whereas this is the third stop and final stop for Sergio Martinez in terms of weight. All those rites of passage things make me really nervous, you know. Certainly, being in Vegas, I mean, how do you not put money on Junior? You know, 2-1 or almost 3-1. You know, other than the fact that I don't bet on fights, but
in the WBC, I mean, you know, it would behoove the WBC to have Chavez Junior be their champion after that, and you know, I'm sure Jose Schulman, he would like Chavez to win. You know, he that's what he wants, and. You know, for whatever that is worth. I mean, he's definitely the WBC favorite, and you know, I don't think it's particularly fair. Like, I don't really like when a sanctioned body president, you know, where they act like, you know, they're supposed to be a little more impartial, I think, you know, but they make no mistake of their
you know, their love for Chavez. You know what I mean? And that's not too good, I don't think.
I don't think so.
No, yes. No, not at all. It's terrible. But well, we almost caused a mini stir this week because Jose Suleiman made a bet with Dave, or tried to make a bet with Dave. What are you guys betting? Dinner or beers?
He's the one that, you know, mentioned let's bet dinner if you know, on who wins. He was saying that he believed that Chavez was going to beat Martinez. And I told him, no, I don't want to take the bet. I'd rather move that bet for a Josie, you know what I mean, for him, for the WBC to do right on his side. So, and it just went from there.
Yeah, I think the fact that the president of the sanction body is openly backing and willing to bet for one of the guys is not a good look at all.
No. And no, I even told him that.
That's
pretty
blatant.
By that. Yeah, we were really thrown back when he did that. Yeah, you know, we were like, wow, that's pretty crazy.
Yeah. If you really,
pretty ballsy.
I mean, you know,
I think pretty ballsy
like
is the right word to
crazy.
Say. Pretty ballsy, you know.
Yeah, like I know it's crazy, but if I sit down and really contemplate that, like that's pretty bad. Like, and that kind of goes what we were saying earlier. Like, these guys are. They're not even trying to hide this kind of stuff anymore. Like, it's just out, and it's like bump it. Everybody knows. We're just going to throw it out in the open, you know? It's unbelievable with you know, and unfortunately, I mean, the WBC seems to be at the forefront of that kind of stuff now, and it's not a good look, especially for outsiders who are monitoring us, you know, our sport.
Exactly.
They just, you know, people just must be like imagine, you know, the commissioner of the Major League Baseball betting a sports writer that the National League is going to win the World Series this year. You know what I mean? Like, how could he do that? He could never do that. But that's exactly what Jose Suleiman is basically doing.
Right. Well, he would never do that in public the way Jose Suleiman did, you know?
Yeah, seriously.
Just tell people that. But, I mean, he kind of just laughs at the rules in general, I mean, because he makes up the rules.
Right.
So, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
Well, Pete Rose isn't allowed in the Hall of Fame because he bet on other teams, you know, like nothing to do with even his own games. And
right. This
guy is betting on, you know, the fighter that he clearly is partial to. So,
well, and he also
has
sway with the judges. That's the thing. He gets to
oh,
oversee.
Oh, for sure.
You know.
Right. Well, you know, I'll tell you a quick thing, you know, and you guys, I'm sure you know this, but some of your listeners, because I, you know, when I first learned this years ago, this really opened my eyes to something. I had a judge tell me one time, he goes, you know what, he goes, here's the crazy thing about our sport. He goes, you get a guy, he's a judge, and, you know, they appoint the judges, and the judges want work. So when you get appointed to certain fights by a certain sanction body, you already know. It's like, you know, subconsciously, you know who they want to win. And you kind of know that you're supposed to, at least if it's possible, bend a little bit in that direction. And if you don't, you know, don't count on getting the call to go to the fight in Tahiti next month. You know what I mean? All expenses paid for 3 days. You know, and when he said that, it really, I said, man, you know, that's, like, the sanction body shouldn't be in charge of the officials. You know what I mean? That's probably rule number one right there, but they are. And so I don't think that's such a good thing either.
No, I think, you know, we could do a 7-hour expose show just on everything
right.
That's wrong. Everything that's wrong with the sanctioning bodies in general.
Yeah.
You know,
sure.
It was like 7 hours per each belt, you know.
Right.
Well, John,
right.
We're up against the end of the show, but I want to thank you for your candor and your time, man. It was it's always a pleasure having you on.
I appreciate it. I really do. And, you know, hopefully in the future I'll have a reason to be back on the show. And it'll be
you always got a reason to be back on the show, John.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It's an honor. I appreciate you saying that. And, you know, I guess I'll be seeing you guys at some point.
Yeah,
absolutely, bro. You have a good
night,
man. Thanks
for
coming on.
Thank you very much. I'll see you guys.
All right.
John the Iceman Scully here with Leaving the Ring and, you know, giving his take about Chad Dawson. You know, overall,
John is great to speak to. You know, you get his insight and what he, how he looks at things. I enjoy it, and I hope our listeners enjoyed it. You know, I like what he has to say. He's really open, you know, once he gets going and stuff. But, you know, he was absolutely right when he was talking about, what did you expect me to say when, you know, when you're asking me if training camp is going all well? And just to throw out there, is that when we heard, Gable, about the knockdown during training camp, we were at the Solo Boxeo event, and what did I tell you? I said, that could be due. I could believe it if they're having problems making weight, because, you know, you need nutrient, you need protein, you need that extra to keep your legs strong. And if you're being drained and trying to make weight, you become weak.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you become susceptible, you know. And it was interesting that he brought up the Gerald McClellan camp, because I don't know if you've seen that documentary. And I know Emmanuel Stewart isn't the happiest about that documentary, but it does show that when he killed himself to make weight, he kind of went on the cheap. He went with a different trainer. And he just didn't do things the right way, and that's really dangerous for your brain. It's one of the main reasons they've gone to day before weigh-ins as opposed to day after. The weight does matter, and it's funny. Like Steve Kim brought up, you know, kind of the double standard of, you know, the fan base that attacks Manny Pacquiao for making Cotto be at a catch weight, and those 2 pounds, even though, you know, Cotto was really only weighing in 1 pound less than he had in his last fight, absolutely affected him and really ruined him in that fight. But the same people that are saying that the poundage that Chad Dawson lost doesn't mean anything at all. And that's just simply, you know, I think it factors in. You have to factor it in, you know, without question. But at the same time, you have to factor in the fact that Chad Dawson got beaten from pillar to post by a very technically savvy, very well-prepared Andre Ward. They worked on that left hook. They knew. You can even hear Virgil's answer when I asked him about it. He was kind of like, I don't really want you to know about the left hook that we were working on, but they were working on it. And you could see it. He knew exactly when to throw it, where to throw it, and how to throw it. And it worked to perfection. And he kept using it, real compact. It was nice, you know. Andre always adds an extra tool just made for the guy he's fighting. And you just can't take it away. I don't get the pound for pound stuff, but he is clearly, you know, one of the top 2-3 fighters in the world, without question.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, let's get with that fight schedule. We're almost close to the end of the show. And go ahead.
Here we go. Friday night, we'll keep it brief, on Telemundo at the a la carte event pavilion in Tampa Bay, in Tampa, Florida. Omar Soto, 22-9-2 versus Glenn Donaire, 19-4-1. Moving over to Saturday with the dueling cards, September 15th, Saturday 2012 at the Thomas and Mack Center in Las Vegas, Nevada, on HBO pay-per-view. Sergio Martinez in his first pay-per-view, 49-2-2. This is the second time Martinez has fought in Las Vegas, first time he lost to Antonio Margarito in his 17th fight, actually rather 18th fight. Now he comes back full circle to take on Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., 46-0-1. I've got Martinez by decision. David?
I got Martinez by decision, too. You know, I mean, I think it's going to be really tough for him to stop the kid. But I think he's going to give – I think they're both going to walk away pretty busted up. A piece of them is going to be left in that ring. And I think the kid, though, regardless of what we've said and thought about him in the past, that he's going to give it an effort. But he's just in there with a guy that's in his prime, a guy that's just in every aspect on paper, he should be the victor. But there's going to be a weight issue there. Martinez is up against a big kid. And we've seen in the past that Martinez does fold under pressure, a lot of pressure. So that's the only thing in my mind that I think that Chavez Jr. can bring. But being a punching bag for numerous rounds, you could chip away at that block, and it's going to chip. Doesn't matter how much of a chunk you knock off, it's going to chip. And it'll slow him down. And I think there's a strong possibility that he's going to break his spirit after six, seven rounds and realizes he's in with a world-class guy, you know, something he has not faced and been up against. You don't learn on the job facing one of the best in the world.
In support there, Roman Martinez, 25-1-1 versus Miguel Beltran, 27-1. This is for the WBO Junior Lightweight Belt. Guillermo Rigondeaux, 10-0 versus Robert Marroquin, 22-1 for the WBA Junior Featherweight Belt. And then also Matthew Macklin, 28-4 versus Joaquin Alcine, 33-2-1. I think that one goes real fast. I think Rigondeaux knocks him out in like 8 rounds. Roman Martinez, Miguel Beltran's could be a fun fight. I think they're going to go at it. I'm not sure exactly how that one's going to go. We're really up to you. At the MGM Grand, Las Vegas, Nevada, Showtime, right down the street, Saul Alvarez, 40-0-1 versus Josecito Lopez, 30-4 for the WBC Junior Middleweight Belt. I like Josecito's chances. I'm picking Alvarez by decision. Maybe even late stoppage because, as Josecito told us, his face swells up pretty bad. So, I'm going with Alvarez. I'm going with the chalk.
You know, I think that Josecito is going to give the – he's going to fight. I don't think he's not going to – he doesn't know any other way. He's going to fight. But I think the same thing. I think his face is not going to be able to hold up. He's fighting against a guy that's a bigger kid who throws nice combination, a little bit more precise with his punches, doesn't get as wild and you know, open. It doesn't give you that much – that many opportunities the way Ortiz did for Josecito, you know. So Josecito's up against a guy that's just a much better boxer and at the same time is just a much bigger guy. And at the same time, Josecito's up against his own face.
Yeah, that's exactly it. He's up against his face. Johnny Gonzalez, 52-7 versus Daniel Ponce de Leon, 43-4 for the Ring Magazine. What am I saying? WBC featherweight belt. I like Gonzalez in this. I think I actually might even like him by stoppage, out of nowhere, right hook, rather left hook dealing. I think he's going to be able to deal with the southpaw style of Daniel Ponce de Leon. He's a power puncher. He's a trickier boxer than people give him credit for, but you can get around him. You can box him from the outside. I think that's the way I'm going, is that it's going to be a full kind of not boxing lesson, but kind of an outside beating until he starts to bring it inside and really starts to take it to Ponce de Leon. I like Ponce's chances, you know, because he's got the power, but I just have a feeling about Gonzalez in this fight.
You know, man, I'm going to go up against with you on that one. You know, I think that Ponce is going to pull it off, I'll tell you the truth. The last guy that knocked out Ponce de Leon had power and he was quick, you know, he's accurate. And that was, Juanma Lopez. That's what before it all got to his head, you know. And I think that Ponce learned his lesson when he got in with a big puncher, which was he went for the gusto, believing that he was the bigger, stronger man, and he paid dearly for it. I don't think he's going to make that mistake again. Not with Johnny Gonzalez. I like what Johnny brings to the table, but at the same time, I think that Ponce de Leon, to me, in my opinion, is a much bigger puncher. And as awkward as he is, I think he's really hard to time. And that's what throws off a lot of fighters, just throws them off and stuff. So I'm going to go with Ponce de Leon by late KO. You know, and Johnny's been known to be dropped and hurt, and he can get caught.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's a nice fight is that it can go either way. That's what's pretty sweet about it. I'll bet you a beer on that one. And then Leo Santa Cruz, 20-0-1 versus Eric Morrell, 46-3. This is an interesting fight. Santa Cruz is a young champion, spinning his belt for the first time, and they're putting him in against a pretty good boxer in Eric Morrell, who can turn and run and really stink out the joint if given the chance. He will mix it up at times. Santa Cruz has his work cut out for him. We're going to find out. I think it's a bad style matchup for him, to be perfectly honest.
I thought so too, man. I mean, you know, when you got a kid that is just moving up in the ladder, I mean, they just throw him at the top, you know? So it's an interesting fight. Morrell can definitely just really just interrupt his progression. So, if anything, he's going to learn win or lose.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it's going to be a learning fight, but I don't think it's going to be a pretty fight. I don't think there's a knockout in that fight. They're calling it knockout kings, but I think they've really done Leo a disservice. If he stops Eric Morrell, I'll be really, really absolutely impressed. And rounding out that card, Marcos Maidana versus Jesus Soto Carras, 31-3 versus 26 7-3. I went with the upset special here. I kind of like Jesus Soto Carras. I think he's the bigger guy. He's the more natural welterweight. He's rugged.
Way
he does
bigger guy.
What's that?
I said way bigger guy.
Way bigger guy. And I think that Maidana could be had. The power is a problem. I want to see if Carras cuts, but I'm going with him.
Here's the thing is that, you know, he fought Mike Jones, was, you know, technically more sound in boxing, bigger guy, you know, in that 147 division. He's fought guys that outdo him in the athlete department. I'm fighting a guy that almost fights somewhat similar to him, but he's the bigger guy, you know, and I'm going to pick that over, you know, over for Maidana, who's always shown too hard and has been a big puncher at 140. I just don't see him, though, being able to get away with it with Soto Carras, who does take a good punch. He knows how to take a good punch, but also hits back pretty hard himself. And has been known for a guy. We used to call him the poor man version of Antonio Margarito. So Maidana's got a lot on his plate facing Soto Carras. I got Soto Carras by mid-round stoppage.
Wow. That's a pretty bold one. And then you have Andreas Gutierrez, 22-0-1 versus Salvador Sanchez. It's not that Salvador Sanchez, 34-3. And Sergio Thompson, 23-2, getting no love after stopping Jorge Linares. He's the opening bout on this card versus Christian Palma, 18-6-1. At the Stuttgart Arena, Bamberg, Germany, Johan Hernandez, 26-1 versus Troy Ross, 25-2 for the IBF Cruiserweight belt. I'm going to take Hernandez in that fight. And then Matus Mastrnak, 27-0 versus David Quinonero, 27-0. Battle of undefeateds, an unranked guy versus a ranked guy, at least according to the Ring magazine. And that's your weekend fight schedule.
Well, there you go, brother. All right, man. Well, everybody, thanks for tuning in. We always appreciate it here on Leaving Ring, 3 hours of boxing talk. I'm your co-host, Dave Duenas, and my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chin. Be safe, don't drink and drive, and enjoy the weekend fights, man. I'll see you guys next Thursday.
I can't wait. Peace.